McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. It's nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He's going to come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, punch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive. This is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And welcome to a Friday edition of the John Murphy Show. Chris Brown alongside Bills Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas. Look what the cat dragged in, huh? Not bad for me on a Friday. I'll tell you that right now. Thanks for stopping in, fella.
Not a problem, man. Filling in for my good buddy Steve. Hope he's okay.
Yeah, he's just a little indisposed.
Right.
Some normal...
He's hitting
normal
the July...
normal medical maintenance for guys.
Hitting the July 4th weekend early. Yeah, well, I got it. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Yeah, happy 4th of July weekend. Are you the grill master on July 4th? Are you the guy on the grill?
No. I stopped cooking and all that stuff once me and Patty got together. It was done.
Does she cook?
She does all the cooking, yeah.
She's even out on the grill, too?
Even out on the grill.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. I just clean up.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're not cooking, you better be cleaning up.
Yeah, I'm cleaning up.
All right. Yeah, because I was going to say, like, I'm just kind of curious what your what your number one 4th of July item is. I mean, are you just simple, regular, run-of-the-mill hot dogs, hamburgers?
Yeah,
you just...
store guy. I'm the store guy also.
Okay.
Yeah, I get the list and go to the store, sit them there in Wegmans. I usually go at nighttime when nobody's there.
Yeah.
So I can just have the whole place to myself.
And here on the show, here on the John Murphy, well, you know, I mean... I'd roll the grill up right here if I could, get an early start, because I just got a hold of some brisket that I want to do some stuff with.
Oh, wow.
You know, like every time we go to Kansas City when the Bills are playing the Chiefs, I always make sure to get myself some brisket, but I want to try that out on the 4th, and it'd be my first foray into it, and it's tough because I don't have one of them slow cookers.
Right.
But I do have a Weber grill, and they say – it's got three burners on it, so they say just drop that thing in the middle, leave the middle burner off, put the two ones on the outside on, and then the heat just circulates around it.
Right.
You know, I'm just worried about keeping the temperature at the right spot because you got to cook that low heat for a long time. And I'm worried I don't have enough propane in the tank to go 6-7 hours either, or a family with the kind of patience to deal with that.
You'll be fine.
But here on the John Murphy Show, we have to kind of shift the focus a little bit in light of what's going on with the Buffalo Sabres just breaking. And the Sabres have confirmed this now, so it is official. The Sabres have traded Tyler Ennis and Marcus Foligno to the Minnesota Wild in exchange for Jason Pominville and Marco Scandella. So a big defenseman coming the way of the Sabres, and we know they needed help on the blue line.
Yes.
And you're a Sabres fan. You go to games.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, at first blush, what's your feeling on this one?
Well, I mean, after I saw Andrew Peters, I said, thumbs up. He was like, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm excited for it to have Pom back in town. A good friend of mine when he played here, and glad to see him back.
They'll be better on shootouts. I know that.
They're
definitely better on shootouts.
Well, let's not hope they get to a lot of shootouts.
Well, yeah. All right, great.
but he's real good, great on shootouts. So yeah, let's you know. And I think him coming back here, you know, it's Eichel's team.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of pressure on Pominville. I mean, he was a captain here,
right?
And you don't have that pressure. He's an older player now, but I think coming back here to Buffalo, I think, you know, the fans and everybody get back into it and like, yeah, this guy was great for us. And, you know, all the pressure's not on him now. He can just go out and just perform now.
For a far better breakdown and analysis of what this trade means for the Sabres, we go to a far more qualified person in Paul Hamilton, Sabres beat reporter at WGR Sports Radio 550, who's joining us on the line right now. Paul, I know you're in scramble mode probably right now, so we appreciate the time you're willing to give us, but maybe just give us your first read on this move and what it does, you know, for the Sabres going forward.
I think this is a fantastic trade by Jason Botterill and his staff. I really think it fills a need now for Buffalo. And just look what they've – in my mind, I thought the Sabres probably had the worst defense in the National Hockey League or pretty close to it last year. And look at the moves they've already made, getting Beaulieu and signing Antipin, and now acquiring Marco Scandella, a guy who I think could maybe slide in right next to Rasmus Ristolainen. And give them a good pair where Ristolainen might offer one thing, a more offensive, defensive type of a player. Scandella had 1 year where he scored 11 goals, but he's had 1, 3, 5, 4. I mean, he's not a huge offensive type blue liner, but he's very solid. And, you know, Minnesota was looking to flip their depth, trying to get help up front. They thought they needed some bigger bodies, some tougher bodies in Marcus Foligno, and hoping that maybe Tyler Ennis can rediscover with a change of scenery his 20-goal seasons from a couple of years ago. But I think this is just a great trade for Buffalo's blue line.
So maybe give us the thumbnail sketch of Scandella. You kind of gave us a little bit there, not necessarily a true offensive-type defenseman, but is he a stay-at-home guy? Is he a two-way guy? Can he captain a power play? What are we looking at in him?
Well, I think he can get up ice, which is what Housley would want if he's asked to do that. He's 27 years old, so just probably entering the prime of his career. He was a second-round pick in 2008. And as I said, not a guy that, you know, has put up huge eye-popping numbers. You know, in 71 games with the Wild, 4 goals, 9 assists for 13 points. Minnesota did have some trouble scoring goals this year. That was one of the problems they had. So when the whole team is not scoring goals, you're not going to run up a lot of offensive numbers either. But this is a guy, too, that has played in the playoffs, has 39 playoff games under his belt with the Wild, and can bring that type of experience. But Buffalo really needed to revamp that blue line. And you know, he's not like a huge guy. He's not like 6'4", 6'5". They got him listed here at 6'1", 205. But he's definitely a guy that I think if fitting Housley's style. And Phil Housley, definitely. I think the way both the Bills and the Sabres do things now, it's more of a collective type of a thing. There's more communication. So I guarantee you Phil Housley was sitting in the room when Jason Botterill was talking about this, and his opinion was very much valued as far as how he could use this player and how he would fit into Housley's system, which I don't want fans to misunderstand. It's not just run and gun. Yes, he wants the defense to join the rush. He wants the defense to be involved. He wants to create confusion in the offensive zone. But they're going to take care of their own end, too. The Nashville defense scored a lot of goals, but they also were great in their own end. They did not neglect that part of the game. So I think Scandella can help in both ends.
Paul, with this trade going through today, and you look at a guy like Evander Kane, what do you think the Sabres, if they do possibly trade Evander Kane, who is a guy that I really do like, what do you think that they would be looking forward to getting, something like more defenseman forward or another center or what?
I think that would be more, if you're going to do that, you'd be looking for a younger player. Not that Evander Kane is old.
Right.
But what you're looking at, this is a business transaction is what you look at. You're looking forward. You're looking at, you know, I don't know, we could just throw numbers out there. When Jack Eichel signs, probably $9.5-10 million per year. Who knows where Sam Reinhart's going to be when he gets his new contract. Now you bring in Scandella's money. Now you bring in Pominville's money, which is a lot more than Tyler Ennis's money. So when I mean, for a year you're okay, but once these contracts start kicking in, you've already got O'Reilly's money in there. You already got Oposo's money in there. Do you have the money where you can sign Evander Kane? If Evander Kane has another big year and goes over 30 goals, 35 goals, stays healthy, he's going to be looking for $7 million or somewhere in that neighborhood. And now you're to a point where you're saying to yourself, I don't think we can do that. I don't think we can sign Evander Kane to a long-term deal because we don't have the money to do that right now. Some money's going to come off the books. Yes, Josh Georges has one more year. Next year you could always buy out somebody if you wanted to do that. I suppose you could make it work if you absolutely wanted to, but that's where I think the Evander Kane thing would be. You're looking at it from a business aspect. Can we re-sign this player when he comes up? We have one more year to do it. Yeah. Maybe you want to keep him through the year. Maybe his value is better as you approach the trade deadline.
Yeah, because that was going to be my next question, Paul, because obviously you've got dollars coming in. Dollars have to go out in some shape or form. Do you think that this trade increases the likelihood of Kane being moved, or are they mutually exclusive?
No, I think it would be about the same because Buffalo was trying to get a defenseman. Not that Scandella is going to break the bank or anything like that. but you still have, you know, Pominville's salary now that you
right.
bring in, and you have Scandella's money that you bring in, and it's a lot more, like the qualifying offer for Marcus Foligno was like 2.15 or 2.25 off the top of my head, something like that. So you had that, but you have now, Scandella's not outrageous. I mean, you only got it's around a $4 million cap that you've got with him, but that's $4 million that you've added that you didn't take off your books. And then you got Pominville's around five or so, something like that. Now that's on your books. All you've taken off Ennis's, which is north of four. You've taken off Foligno's, which is north of two. But you've added salary to your roster now. No salary was retained on either end here. So there's only so much you're going to be able to do. As I said, this year you're fine. You don't necessarily have to do anything this year because Eichel's contract is not signed or agreed to, or would not kick in even if it is, nor would Reinhardt's. You have another year left on their entry-level deals.
So with respect to the blue line now, with all the changes that have happened, and I know we've got a new coach who's going to make his own assessments, but as best as you can, Paul, can you give us your pecking order, if you will, in terms of the D right now for the Sabres, you know, 1 through 6?
You know me all too well. I've already done that. I've already written down my depth chart here. And with that in mind, like Gooley, I think Gooley's going to be a great prospect. But I think this, and the way Housley and Botterill have spoken, it seems like they want a 19-year-old going on 20, maybe starting in Rochester. And maybe Casey Nelson would be down there with them. Not necessarily down there all year. So with that in mind, I think you could look at Ristolainen with Scandella. McCabe played with Bogosian last year. And then Beaulieu with Antipin. And Josh Georges is your number seven right now. Could they make a move on Josh Georges? I don't know what the market would be for him. Because I think you could use Falk or Fadoon. I first thought Falk would be your number seven. And then I kind of flipped it to Fadoon because I think he fits Phil Housley better than Falk would. But if Georges is still around, I think right now he might be your number seven, and then Fadoon and Falk would start in the minors.
Okay.
All right.
So Scandella is your top pairing. Okay.
Right now, I mean, that could change. I have Antipin playing on the right side.
Yeah.
He is a left-handed shot, but he's perfectly capable. I saw him play in the World Championships. He played both left and right side, so playing the right side does not bother him at all. I haven't had a chance to ask Beaulieu if he would be comfortable over on that right side, but I know Antipin is.
And Scandella is a lefty, right?
Yes, he's a left-handed shot.
Okay.
Wow.
So moving forward here, Paul, this is a pretty big deal. So, I mean, do you see how much more business can you realistically foresee for the Sabres, you know, with free agency starting tomorrow? And being mindful of their cap situation and the money they've got on the books. I mean, I know you said they're fine for this year, but how fine are they to do more business now knowing they're taking on the Pominville contract?
Well, I think they have to. Any business that they do is going to be mindful of money in, money out. Botterill took care of the cap situation in Pittsburgh and maneuvered it very well because, you don't forget, you've got two very high-end guys on your cap in Malkin and Crosby there, but yet you still have Letang on your team. You still have Phil Kessel on your team. He was able to do the cap there, so it's something he has a lot of experience with. He knows what he's doing when it comes to that, and he knows how to master the cap. You gained $2 million this year that you didn't have last year on the cap, but I think Botterill in the trades is certainly going to have to be money in, money out for the most part. But, again, he can take on some money this year a little bit, knowing that maybe we're going to get some money off the books next year, knowing that maybe, okay, we didn't buy out Molson or we didn't buy out Bogosian or we didn't, at the time, Ennis. Ennis is now gone. Thinking, let's go, let it go one more year. And then it's a little less on our cap. Maybe, you see how Matt Molson goes. If it doesn't go well, maybe you buy him out next year, and it doesn't strap your cap anywhere near as much as it did before. So I'm sure all those ideas are going through his mind right now.
Paul, at this stage of Pominville's career, where do you see him right now fitting in? I mean, how much does he have left in the tank?
Well, he played a lot of fourth line with Minnesota. I want to say he was a healthy scratch at some point, but I would have to look that up to make sure. But I have that in my mind that he possibly was a healthy scratch at some point. Played some fourth line. Then in the playoffs, he moved up the lineup. So it's starting to be towards the end. This is my guess. I don't have anything to back this up. Nobody's told me anything. I'm thinking this is how this all went down. That the Minnesota said, we'd like you to take Jason Pominville's salary from us. And then Jason Botterill said, okay, we'll do that. But we need maybe for you to take Tyler Ennis off our hands. You know, so Buffalo's going to take on more salary in that transaction, but they're not going to take on the full boat from Pominville because, and Tyler Ennis is the greatest kid in the world, and he's going to work as hard as he can. But let's face it, he hasn't been the same for 2 years. To me, he really didn't have a lot of trade value. You're basically hoping that after two major concussions that came within a month, and then he had the stomach surgery and the groin surgery, he has missed the better part of 2 years. And when he has played, hasn't been even a shadow of himself that he was when he was basically Buffalo's best player, when he was playing with eight or nine Amerks in the lineup on a nightly basis and scoring 20 goals. So that's what I come to the conclusion that maybe it went down that way, that we'd like you to take Pominville because we want to get this off our books. And the Sabres said, fine, we'll do that. And maybe we'll swap you the pick, the fourth-round pick and the third-round pick, but you're going to have to take something from us too. I wouldn't be surprised if it went down that way.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Scandella and Foligno are the principal parts of this deal, but, yeah, I mean, it can't hurt to take care of some other business at the same time and package it together. So, Paul, based on all that's happened on the Sabres blue line, you think business is closed with respect to, you know, fortifying that part of the roster at this point for the Sabres?
Well, you've got three brand new ones that doesn't count Gouley.
Right.
And Gouley, as I said, I think he's going to be a very good one. So, you know, he's sitting there waiting in the wings. And what do you do with him if he has a great training camp, which he's done the past couple of years? I remember Dan Bylsma saying he was as close as he possibly could have been to making the opening night lineup last year. And at the last second, they decided to send him back down to junior and at the time keep Casey Nelson, who, by the way, improved a lot in Rochester this year. He was really messed up going down there. His confidence was shot. And about Christmas time, he got going. And I went down and watched a game where Gouley and Nelson were paired together. Gouley was by far the best defenseman on the ice for either team. And Nelson, I really was impressed by. I really think he went down there and improved his game. So as a young defenseman, don't sleep on him either. I think he's somebody that quite possibly could be in Buffalo's future.
What about, a name just came and went. Was it Shattenkirk?
Shattenkirk, the unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, does this deal make him?
Thanks for coming.
Really,
I don't know that it was that realistic to begin with, right, Paul?
And if you sign Shattenkirk, I think Evander Kane is as good as gone. I mean, there's no way you could keep him. Because Shattenkirk you're going to overpay for.
Right.
You're probably going to get in the $7 million range for a one-dimensional defenseman, very good offensively, probably would improve offensively under Housley, but really cost Washington a lot in his own end. He made some major errors in the series against the Penguins and did not look good at all. I think he's an average to below-average defenseman in his own end. But I will say this. If you want to look at him positively, if he were to get in with Phil Housley, look at P.K. Subban. Subban was already a really good defenseman when he arrived in Nashville. He is great now. Housley has turned him into a great defenseman, and he used him in the right situations. He actually didn't put him out there in the first pair. He put him in situations to succeed and made him into a much better defenseman when he was already really good. So, you know, I'm not a real fan of Shattenkirk, especially with the amount of money it's going to cost to sign him.
Right.
But on the other hand, I think maybe Housley could make him into a better defenseman also.
We're talking to Sabres beat reporter Paul Hamilton from WGR Sports Radio 550. After the Sabres have traded Tyler Ennis and Marcus Foligno to the Minnesota Wild in exchange for Jason Pominville and defenseman Marco Scandella. So, Paul, now that, I mean, you've given us your depth chart, it's a pretty good-looking top six, you know, and George's is your seven, at least on your depth chart. But maybe describe, if you could, if you had to describe the group as a whole, what would be the best way to describe this group? Is it a well-rounded group? Is it a group that's got some versatility? I'm just kind of curious if you could just package the top six and say the Sabres defense is now what?
Faster. And people don't realize what a good skater Zach Bogosian is. He is a very good skater because he didn't get up ice all that much.
Right.
If you want to see how fast he is, go watch the overtime goal in Montreal this year when he got up ice and scored the goal. He really does have some speed, but he just never really wanted to get up into the play. And Tippen, what I noticed with him in the World Championships, he's very active in the offensive zone. Exactly what Phil Housley wants. Phil Housley wants to create confusion in the offensive zone. How does he do that? By active defensemen, moving, hitting open spots, those types of things. And Tippen was great at that at the World Championships. I really liked it a lot. Beaulieu is a good skater, a good passer. He's very inconsistent with Montreal. That was the maddening part about him when people talked about him, and probably why he went from being on the number one pair with Shea Weber to open the season. By the time the season ended with the last playoff game, he was a healthy scratch. So that's what Phil Housley has with him, a guy that can skate very well, can get up ice, but has been very inconsistent. Now they want to get consistency out of that youngster, and if they do, you've got a guy that can move up ice. Look at all the chances Jake McCabe had last year. Just he missed the net on some gorgeous chances. Jake McCabe is very good at sneaking in on the back door, and they hit him. Eichel hit him numerous times over there, and he'd miss the net or put it right into the goaltender. But he really produced some very good chances. Now they've got to teach him how to convert on those chances.
So do you see this defense core now as a group of interchangeable parts for Coach Housley, or are there going to be some strictly defined roles? Because I'm just thinking to myself, one of these guys goes down with an injury, they're out 2 or 3 weeks. Do we have skill sets among these six where there are enough interchangeable parts where you don't have a lot of drop-off, say, on your top pair if one of the top two go down, or with your second pair if one of those two guys go down?
Well, the depth is really the youngsters. I think Falk and Fadun did a nice job of filling in when needed last year. I think Gouley is going to be a great defenseman. I really do. He's a steal in the second round, I believe. So Nelson, as I told you, has improved a lot. He's a right-handed shot defenseman. So, you know, you could plug him in. Yeah, you know, Ristolainen's the number one, and I'm very excited to see what Housley does with him. All he needs is some consistency, and, you know, he is going to be fine, and I think you're going to see some improvement out of him. The thing you didn't like about him is he had a great start to the year. Then at the end of the year, he was pretty consistently not playing the way he's capable of playing. And quite honestly, he would be the first one to tell you that, and did in some interviews. He didn't feel like he played up to what he could. So the problem is with Josh George is he's number seven. He's not going to get up in the play.
Right.
I mean, he's not fast. He's not offensive. So when he's in the lineup, it's going to be a little bit different than when Ristolainen's in the lineup or Antipin's in the lineup or Gouley's in the lineup or anything like that. But you have a pretty good mix. I mean, Jake McCabe is a very good in his own zone. Bogosian, when he's treated the way he needs to be treated by the coaching staff, is pretty good in his offensive zone when he's on his game. And, of course, you have Ristolainen eating up all those minutes all the time.
Yeah. Well, Paul, listen.
And really, they should probably reduce his minutes, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
Right.
Paul, listen, we thank you very much for the time. We know you're in scramble mode now to kind of get all the coverage up on WGR's website and move along and probably get to a press conference in the not-too-distant future here. So thanks for taking the time and joining us here on the John Murphy Show. We appreciate it.
Not a problem. Take care, guys.
Thanks, all right, Paul. That's Sabres beat reporter Paul Hamilton from WGR Sports Radio 550 helping us out with the Sabres trade that just went down less than an hour ago. Sabres trading Tyler Ennis and Marcus Foligno to the Minnesota Wild in exchange for Jason Pominville and defenseman Marco Scandella. Scandella clearly the key piece of the deal for the Sabres, who have a defense corps that looks miles better already than it did last year when – you know, people are doing a lot of face palms,
right,
watching guys get skated around, goals scored on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And probably the happiest guy in a Sabres uniform right now is Robin Leonard.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when it comes to shootouts, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Exactly.
So we wanted to cover that because it is right. important news, and certainly there's probably a lot of Sabres fans that are happy that yep. the blue line is that much stronger with Scandella now on his way to Buffalo. With Jason Pominville, who was a very popular player here the last time around, a team captain, as Thurman mentioned. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a guy that I think could still play a role for this team, maybe not as big a role as he had the last time he was here, you know, very advanced in his career now, certainly on the back side of it. But, you know, a guy that I think can play a role on this.
I definitely think he can play a role. You know what? Hey, look, the fans have been great here, and he knows how the fans are when you put a winning product out on the hockey rink. And I think, you know, with him not being the guy and having Jack Eichel on his hockey team and Ryan O'Reilly and all those guys, he can just sit back and just, you know, just do his job very, very well. And, you know, I hope he stays here for a couple of years and, you know, we get to the playoffs and all that good stuff. So, I mean, he's a very good part to the puzzle, and happy to have him back here in Buffalo.
And as good as this Sabres news is, Thurman and I still have to talk a little bit of football here. This is the John Murphy Show, after all. So
I thought it was hockey.
You would have thought by the way we let off here today, right? But we're going to reset the table here and get into some football because there is some stuff going around the league. And, you know, training camp is now less than a month away. And we've got to talk about, you know, some of those roster decisions that are made, some questions that you might have that you're hoping to get answered with respect to this roster by the time training camp and the preseason is over. We're going to dive into that when we come back after this short little break here. It's Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas, Chris Brown with you here on a Friday edition of the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas here on a Friday edition of the John Murphy Show. Happy 4th of July weekend, everybody. I don't think anybody's working on Monday, right? July 3rd? That is a mail-it-in Monday if ever there was one. So the July 4th weekend is essentially about to start here. At least for us, it will at 3 p.m. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. As Thurman and I reset the show because the Sabres news obviously took precedent in our first segment with that big trade that just went down here in the last hour, trading Tyler Ennis and Marcus Foligno to the Minnesota Wild in exchange for Jason Pominville and Marco Scandella. Pominville coming back to the Sabres where he spent the first 9 seasons of his career. So that's exciting news on the other side of the One Buffalo Ledger here. But we've got to get down to some stuff affecting the Buffalo Bills. And less than a month away from going to training camp, and I think there are a multitude of questions that fans want answered about this team, you know, for themselves, and we'll get into some of those. I think there's a pressing question, which is also part of our Twitter poll today, which is who is the most likely to have a bounce back year in 2017 under new head coach Sean McDermott? And we picked, I mean, I'm sure there's more than 4 choices here, but
right.
we went with Ronald Darby, Marcel Darius, Jerry Hughes, and Sammy Watkins. Who is most likely to have a bounce back year? And leading the way in our Twitter poll right now, as our MSG viewers can see, is Sammy Watkins. He's got more than half the vote, almost 2/3 of the vote, getting 58%. Marcel Darius getting 28% of the vote. And then Ronald Darby and Jerry Hughes kind of pulling up the rear there with less than 10% of the vote so far. Is there a favorite on that list, Thurman, that you have in terms of most likely to have a bounce back year?
Well, you know what? You look at the list, and the obvious choice is Sammy Watkins.
Yeah.
You want him to have a bounce back year. But I look at Jerry Hughes. I look at Jerry Hughes as really now probably back in his regular position.
Right.
Rushing the passer. So, you know, I know everybody wants to put Sammy in the front, but I'm going to put Jerry Hughes. I think Jerry Hughes is really itching to get back out there and really have another big year. I think the last couple of years, I mean, he started off on fire last year. And I thought, wow, it's going to be double-digit sacks here and just kind of tailed off at the end there. But now I think in Coach McDermott's style of defense, I think he's going to be – I think he's
a better fit for him,
It's a way better fit for him. And that's why, you know, like I said, the obvious choice is Sammy Watkins, but I think it's going to be Jerry Hughes.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I picked Jerry on my list also. And I agree. I think this scheme is a perfect fit for what he does.
Yeah.
This scheme is very similar to the Jim Schwartz scheme that
yes,
we saw in 2014.
Yes, it is.
You tell your front four, get up the field, go get the quarterback. This is an attack. This is an attack-oriented defense under Coach McDermott as well. I mean, you look at Coach McDermott's defenses over the history that he's been, you know, deploying it. It's all about sacks and takeaways.
That's it.
And the Carolina Panthers have been up near the top of the league in sacks almost every year that Coach McDermott had been down there, those six seasons. And the first year where the Bills really broke out in terms of the sack total, 2013 under Mike Pettine, I think they had 54 sacks, something like that. The Panthers were the only other team that had more. They had 61 that year.
Yeah.
And then the next year, the Bills led the league with 57 under Jim Schwartz, and the Panthers were second. So those two teams were 1-2 those 2 years when the Bills really made some hay in terms of getting after the quarterback. And Jerry Hughes in those two seasons had 10 and 10, back-to-back 10-sack season. I think he can get back there very easily. And people say, well, you don't have Mario on the other side. Well, that's true. But you also have Shaq Lawson, who's no slouch.
Right.
And is also more accustomed to playing in a 4-3 front, too, because that's what he played at Clemson the three years he was there. He said he even played 4-3 fronts in high school. So you've got a player in Shaq Lawson who got 8 games under his belt in a scheme that he wasn't totally comfortable with. I think he's going to keep defenses honest over there, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I, the thing that we talked about most last year was the defense. And now you have a defense that Coach McDermott is bringing in here that fits everybody on that defense. I mean, out of the four guys you had up, the three of them were defensive guys.
Yeah.
And this is a defensive-minded coach. And you see Ronald Darby up there. This is not the man-to-man every single play that you have to cover a wide receiver all the way across the field. They run a lot of zone, and that gives an opportunity for those guys to sit back and watch the plays develop. And Shaq Lawson, I'm ready for him to break loose. I think he's he's a first-round draft pick from Clemson, very highly touted coming out. And so I expect a big year from him. I think he's ready to go. I've been kind of following his Twitter stuff. He's ready to go. He's ready to go.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. And I know we phrased the question on the Twitter poll saying who do they need to have a breakout year the most? And it's clearly Sammy Watkins because the offense needs him to be a true number one wide receiver this year. But in terms of who's most likely to have a bounce back year, I think Hughes is the odds-on favorite only because he's a proven player and we've seen what he can do in this kind of a scheme.
Yeah.
So I think if you're a betting man, you're probably best to bet on Hughes here. I think we all want Sammy Watkins to stay healthy for 16 games. Yeah. And if he does, he's probably going to have a monster year too.
Exactly.
But there is that uncertainty there, and it does cause some measure of concern. Now, you talked about how three of the four players on this list are defensive players. You've got Darius, who I think was very disenchanted with what his role was in the defense the last 2 years, which was basically stand in there and grind and let the linebackers make plays.
Yeah.
That's not what Darius has been his entire career, college and his early part of his career here. And when did he thrive the most? He thrived the most in an upfield attack scheme. This guy is underrated as a passer. He had 10 sacks in 2014 under Jim Schwartz. In this attack-oriented system, I think he's going to be hell on wheels for opposing centers and guards because now he's motivated because he likes the role he's being handed now, don't you think? And that's a dangerous combination.
That is a dangerous thing. But you look at a guy like Kyle Williams. Kyle Williams is probably getting to the end of his career. And now, you know, hey Kyle, just pin him back and go to the quarterback.
Yeah.
Well, that's easy for a guy like Kyle.
Not a lot of thinking there.
Not a lot of thinking.
Just
and he can just go get him, Kyle. You know, maybe you can get 10 sacks this year, and maybe we'll bring you back next year. So I'm looking at this defense to be totally different. And I know there's some tough games coming up. You know, you got Denver, you got Atlanta, you got the Patriots twice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you know what, though? McDermott's defense do not make a lot of mistakes. And that's the thing that I like. And you have him there as the head coach, but you also have Leslie Frazier, who's been a head coach, and now he's the defensive coordinator. You put those combinations together, Man, they can do a lot of things over there on defense right now.
So what Bills player is poised for a rebound season? You can choose from our Twitter poll, Darby, Darius, Hughes, or Watkins, or pick somebody else. We'll go to the phones. We'll lead off with Tom in Niagara Falls. Tom, who's your pick for most likely to have a rebound season there?
Right now, I think Hughes has the benefit of it all.
Right.
Simply for the fact, I think he needs to just get a little bit more muscle behind him, and he's going to shine in this type of defense. 4-3, he knows where he's doing. He knows where he needs to be.
Yeah, and I think he likes the fit. And when a player is happy with his role, I mean, it's a huge difference, right, Thurm?
A huge difference.
I mean, you're grinding all week in practice, and, you know, you're preparing for a game. If you don't feel good about the role you play for your team, I mean, it's hard to lay it on the line, isn't it?
Every snap. I mean
you got to be a pro, but at the same time, feel good, play good.
Feel good, play good. Understand the defense. Understand what the coach wants out of you. Understand the scheme that you're trying to run. And for the front four, there's only one scheme. You get up the field and go get the quarterback.
Now let's talk a little bit about Ronald Darby, because this is a guy that I've had the chance to talk to a couple of times this spring. And, you know, here's a guy that's got a new coach again in the secondary in Gil Bird. He's teaching a whole bunch of different footwork techniques that he's – not to say that Darby can't adapt and adjust, but, you know, it's a learning curve again. And now we got to do this, because he's got them staggering their feet. He's got them pumping them up and down before they get into their pedal. And even their hip flip looks a little bit different based on how Coach Bird wants it done. So I go talk to Ronald Darby, and I'm talking about all this technique stuff that he's got to fix. He doesn't care anything about that. He doesn't care about it at all. All he cares about is that he had a big goose egg in the interception column last year.
Right.
And he is like, Darby is a pretty low-key guy.
Very low-key, yeah.
He's hot about that. And so you want to talk about a guy who's coming into this season with supreme motivation. I think he is embracing taking on the mantle of being the number one corner, facing the number one guy every week.
Yep.
But the thing that's sticking in his head, maybe more than anything, is I had no picks last year.
No picks last year.
So,
and when you talk about secondary coach Gil Bird, ball hawk.
Yeah.
Jairus Bird, ball hawk.
Yep.
That's what he's teaching these guys. These guys are going to be really aggressive. When they have an opportunity to break on a ball and to get an interception, they're going to go for it. And I think as a defensive back, you have to have that. You have to look for interceptions. You have to be aggressive in pretty much every situation that you are out there.
In his opinion, he said he had four surefire picks, like no excuses, had to have them. So in his mind, in 2016, there were four that he should have had that he didn't. And then he felt there were three others that he had a chance at getting also if he didn't take, you know, a false step this way and could get more than just a fingertip on a ball.
So he should have eight this year.
Well, yeah, go one better than seven, right?
Right.
But, no, he is loaded for bear. And, you know, this is a kid that works hard and lays it out there every Sunday. You don't wonder what you're going to get from Ronald Darby on a game day. You know what you're going to get. I think here coming into year three now, I think, you know, and you can speak to this better than I can, but you know how a lot of players say, if I knew at 23 what I know now at 30, what a good player I would be.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's really tried to turn on that mental side of his game as he heads into year three, because I think he's come to realize that if I've got my mental game in tune with, you know, my physical assets, I'm going to have those picks because I'm reading plays faster and I'm reacting quicker.
Right.
So maybe speak to when that light bulb seems to go on for some guys. It happens earlier for some than others.
Yeah.
I don't know if it ever happened for you. When did it happen for you?
Well, it probably didn't happen to me. Probably.
You're just going by on natural ability, aren't you?
Yeah, my
You're
first
a blessed
year.
Man.
My first year. In 1988,
you're just running.
Man, I was just kind of just watching. I was just kind of watching Jim Kelly and watching Andre Reed kind of perform, and knowing that we had a good, solid offensive line. But you know, it was a learning curve for me in my rookie year.
Yeah,
and I think that's how it is pretty much for every player.
Right.
I mean, you can go back all the way to John Elway, Peyton Manning, guys that were first, number one pick overall, struggled. Troy Aikman.
Yeah,
it's a learning curve for every single professional football player that gets drafted or undrafted. So, yeah, it's a learning curve. So I didn't really realize the dynamics of it, and probably until 1988 when we reached the AFC Championship game against Cincinnati, and it all ended, and I was like, you know what? I can do this.
Yeah.
I can be better than this. And that's when it hit me coming into the following year.
And so then at that point, maybe you're thinking about, you know, I'm playing Clay Matthews in a playoff game in 89. How do I set him up?
Right.
Or, you know, how do I get him to cheat maybe 6 inches this way? So on my count and tray, I've got an extra 6 inches to work with.
No doubt, because we went to a different offense.
Yeah.
In 1988, it was Jamie Mueller was a fullback. Carl Byron was a fullback. We ran a lot of two-back offense.
Yeah.
Now you get to the second year, Terry Marshall Broder's like, no, we're not doing that anymore. We're going no huddle, three wides, and all this stuff. And then you kind of learn, you know. And I think going into the 1989 training camp, you know, I was out there like, hey Cornelius, I need to go against you on this pass route to see where I'm at as a football player. Darrell Talley, I need to go against you. Hey, Shane Conlin, you need to blitz and see if I can pick up you. You know, me and you need to go today. So that's
those aren't bad guys to practice.
No, it's not. And so, you know, once you got to the Andre Tippins, the Clay Matthews or whatever, you're like,
ready.
Oh, I got this. Yeah. I got this. So, yeah, it's a learning curve. And you know what? Right now you look at a guy like Ronald Darby going into his third year, and now all of a sudden he's a guy.
You want the mental game to click.
Exactly, because White is going to be asking questions about different type of things. You're going to have these other younger defensive backs who've been here a couple of years.
Yeah.
He's the guy now. And so now a lot of things are getting thrown at him, and he has to respond with those answers right away. And I think he's smart enough to do that.
Yeah. And playing Brady twice a year, you better have those answers because the ball's coming out fast.
Well, if he has to wait till week 12 or week
Well, that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
We can ramp up to that.
Exactly. He can figure it out until he gets to Tom Brady.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Which Bills player poised to have a rebound season in 2017? We've got the four choices on the Twitter poll. Maybe you've got somebody else in mind that you think is more likely to do so. We barely touched on Sammy Watkins, talked about his health a little bit, but Thurman and I are going to dive into that in the next segment here, but we'll step aside right now. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas here on the John Murphy Show on a Friday, heading into that July 4th weekend. Get your grill on, folks. I am ready to fire it up.
Get your grill on.
I think somebody's got it? That.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I didn't invent that one. I'm not in the marketing department, buddy. I just cover the team. I mean, I could come up with a line or two. Don't get me wrong, but they're not paying me money to do that. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, as we talk rebound season. Sammy Watkins only played 8 games last year. Injuries kind of curtailed his production. Marcell Dareus, down year last year. Jerry Hughes, production fell off. Ronald Darby, interceptions fell off a cliff, and he's the first one to tell you that. So out of those four guys, which Bills player do you think is best poised for a rebound season? Sammy Watkins running away with it right now with 58% of the vote. And Watkins is the guy that I wanted to talk to you about, Thurman, in this segment here. Obviously, the foot injury messed everything up. He had a hip injury the year before that, but was still able to put up 900 yards in the last 9 games of 2015. You look over those last 9 games, there were only 2 receivers in the league that had better numbers than him over those last 9 games. One guy was named Antonio Brown. The other guy was named Julio Jones. So I think that just kind of gives you a hint as to what the potential is for Sammy Watkins. But everybody's saying, well, we'll believe it when we see it.
Right.
Let's see him play 16 games and truly see what he can do. If he can play 16 games, what are you thinking? The sky's the limit, right?
Yeah, if he can play 16 games. Me, personally, if he can play 16 games, at least relatively healthy, at least, 1,500 to...
You're going to go 1,500 yards, yeah?
Well,
okay,
somewhere around there.
Yeah.
In 1,300 to 1,500.
Okay.
Double-digit touchdowns.
Because we got to remember,
yeah,
this team only throws it about 29 times a game. Now, it may go up. It may go up
a
little bit
this
year.
Little bit. But you give me 16 games with Sammy Watkins, I think those are the numbers that he's supposed to pick up.
They may only be throwing it 29 times, but 12 or 13 times, it's going to 14.
It should go to 14, no matter what, whether he's on the outside. And I think the thing with Sammy, too, you know, he's such a great, talented athlete. I don't think you just have to put him on the outside all the time.
Yeah.
I think you can put him in the slot.
Okay.
I think you can put him in the slot and move him around. I think he's that talented to where he can perform at any position out on the football field. But like you said, the thing with his health, that's the number one thing. But,
right,
you know, hey, they declined his option.
Right.
So now.
Well, yeah, that's a little extra motivation.
That's a little extra motivation. And that's why I kind of said 1,500.
Yeah.
1,500 yards, because that's a little extra motivation. So, you know, they're always going to be able to run the football. And I think if they can do that, you know, obviously been number one in the league the last 2 years. Even if that falls off to number five, and you still have Sammy for 16 games, man, I'm looking for a big year for Sammy Watkins and his offense. It really wasn't, if you look at the past couple, it really wasn't the offense's fault. It was the defense.
Well, they finished tied 10th in the league in scoring.
Right.
They did their part.
They
were top five in the red zone.
Right.
Number one in rushing, as we know.
So I look at it as, man, if I can have Sammy healthy for 16 games, move him around in the offense, have LeSean, and LeSean talked about it during the OTAs, how he's catching the ball a little bit more out of the backfield. Man, that's going to open up a lot of different more stuff for him.
And, you know, not trying to give away state secrets here, but I think they're going to do more in this offense under Rick Dennison to take advantage of the kinds of plays that Sammy Watkins was successful with, even going back to his college days.
Right.
I think they're just going to try to get the ball in his hands as fast as they can and say, hey, man, go make it happen in some space. You know, try to create some space for him. Because as we know, this is an offense that's rooted in West Coast principles.
Mm-hmm.
There is going to be more of a horizontal nature to some of the passing game. Not all of it. I mean, I still think they're going to take their shots because I think Tyrod and Sammy, when he's on the field, have proven that they can be a good vertical hookup with respect to the passing game in the 2 years they've played together. So that's kind of where that is. And I anticipate the ball in his hands more and probably quicker, too.
Yeah.
I just envision more short stuff going to him this year than maybe we've ever seen before. And I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, I think, and that's the key. Get him the football as many times as you can, whether it's a deep route, a short route, a screen pass, or whatever. Obviously, we all know that he's talented, but when he's healthy, he can be one of the better wide receivers in the National Football League, I think. And he hasn't been able to show that his first 4 years of just staying healthy. But I think as many times as you can get this guy the football, more things, better things will happen for your offense. That's just the way it is.
We are up against the break, but we want to hear from you. Which Bills player is poised for a rebound season here in 2017? Charlie in Buffalo, Mike in Pennsylvania, hang on. We will get to you on the other side. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports Update.
Your sports update from One Bills Drive starts with the Buffalo Sabres, who greatly improved their blue line a day before free agency. GM Jason Bottrell swinging a trade with the Minnesota Wild today, acquiring defenseman Marco Scandella and forward Jason Pominville in exchange for Tyler Ennis and Marcus Foligno. Scandella could wind up being part of a top pairing for the Sabres on the blue line with Rasmus Ruotsalainen. For Pominville, it's his second stint with Buffalo, where he began his career and played 9 seasons. As we said, NHL free agency opens Saturday at noon. NHL clubs had this week to meet with free agents, but actual signings cannot take place until tomorrow. Among the hottest commodities on the market are Washington defenseman Keith Shattenkirk, Montreal winger Alexander Radulov, and Minnesota center Martin Hanzel. The free agent tour of linebacker Zach Orr continues. The 25-year-old linebacker is trying to make a comeback after abruptly retiring due to a neck condition last year. He's wrapping up a visit today with the Detroit Lions and then will reportedly meet with the Jets over the weekend. That, according to ESPN.com, or reportedly has up to 15 NFL teams at least interested in doing their due diligence on him. Certainly physicals will be a big focus with his neck condition. The Oakland Raiders have signed guard Gabe Jackson to a 5-year, $56 million extension with $26 million guaranteed. Jackson was in the final year of his 4-year, $2.9 rookie contract. The guard appeared in all 16 games for the Raiders last year. And the Bisons have a 7:05 first pitch tonight against Syracuse. That's your sports update here from One Bills Drive on the John Murphy Show, where despite all that Sabres news, which is certainly exciting for Sabres fans, we still have Bills stuff to talk about here on the John Murphy Show. Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas joining us here on this Friday edition heading into the July 4th weekend. Happy July 4th, everybody, as we get ready to grill and chill. I'm on vacation for the next 2 weeks after today.
Oh, are you really?
I am itching.
You are ready to go.
I am itching to roll. It might as well be 3 o'clock right now. I'm not going to lie. But we've got some stuff to talk to you guys about, and it's part of our Twitter poll as well. Which player is poised to have a rebound season here in 2017? A lot of guys had seasons individually that fell short of expectations, in addition to team falling short of expectations and not getting to the postseason again. But at 803-0550, tell us who you feel is needed the most to have a rebound season in 2017. Right now, Sammy Watkins running away with our Twitter poll, and I think we can understand why. He really is kind of the linchpin of the receiving core. Marcell Dareus in second with Jerry Hughes and Ronald Darby behind them. Pick one of those guys for us and tell us why, or if you've got another person in mind on the roster, you can tell us as well. 803-0550, the number to get on board, 1-888-550-2550. We go back to the phones and to Charlie in Buffalo to lead us off. Charlie, who do you have as poised best for a rebound season this year?
Well, guys, good afternoon, guys. The guy I have is not on there is Tyrod Taylor. I mean, he's
okay.
Too good of a quarterback, and if our weapons stay healthy most of the year, I think we got a chance of maybe even being a surprise team in the NFL. Everybody's going to be healthy. And I need to ask one other question. With the quarterback situation with Oakland, they just signed Carr. They gave him a barrel of money. When is enough to pay an NFL quarterback, and when does it end? That's all I got to say, guys. And you have a nice weekend and enjoy your 4th of July.
All right, you too, Charlie. Thanks for the call.
I don't think it's ever going to
end. That's never going to end.
I don't think this is ever going to end, Charlie.
And we actually had a show on this very topic earlier in the week, talking about where those quarterback salaries are going. Derek Carr is currently the highest-paid quarterback in the league right now based on average salary of just a shade over $25 million a year. And we had a former agent on the show, Joel Corey, and we were talking to him about that. And I was joking with him, saying, how long is Derek Carr going to be at the top of the list here? He goes, maybe about a month.
Right.
Because you've got Matthew Stafford due
yes.
for an extension.
Yep.
You've got a couple other guys in the league that are going to be up. Matt Ryan's coming up next year.
Yeah.
I mean, the money that guy's going to make, forget it. So, you know, and then you also have Breeze, who's kind of been doing this, add a year to my contract, year over year, add
right.
another year, add another year. And Brady might be in that same boat in a year's time. So it's never going to stop. And I don't think anybody would argue that in a league that is gravitating all the more to the passing side of the ledger in terms of offense, having that quarterback is more important than it has ever been
right.
in the league. So I hate to tell you, Charlie, but these – half these guys are going to be making $30 million in about 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and those
maybe sooner than that.
And those are the guys that you just talked about. I mean, Derek Carr, Matt Ryan, probably up, and Stafford. Now, you look at a guy like Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers,
mm-hmm.
Tom Brady. Who else is up
Russell
there?
Wilson will be up in
Russell
2 years.
Russell Wilson will be up. I think quarterback for Arizona.
Oh,
Carson Palmer.
I mean, well, he might retire.
He might retire, but I'm just saying, yeah. though, the guys that I just named there, the older guys, they're going to retire soon. So you're looking at the quarterback situation now, like.
Well, they're already talking about Carson Wentz in a couple of years. Now, you can't renegotiate your rookie deal by rule until
yeah.
your third year. That's the first time you can get a crack at that, or after your third year, or before your after your second year. Third year, you can start talking renegotiation if you're exceeding the value
right.
of the contract. And there's a player in the NFL that we're going to talk about later in the show about that, too. But specifically Tyrod, who Charlie brought up,
yeah.
I don't necessarily think it has to be a bounce-back season. I think he had a season that was relatively comparable to his first year, not as successful with the deep ball. Oh, by the way, Sammy off the field for half the season,
yeah.
So that didn't help. His completion percentage down slightly. It was 62 and change in 2015. It was just under 62% in 2016. I thought he took a step forward in finding targets in the middle of the field mm-hmm. at the end of the year last year, particularly Charles Clay in the last 2 weeks of the season
yep.
against Cleveland and Miami when Charles went off. I mean, 15 catches, 157 yards, three touchdowns in those last two games with Tyrod on the field. And if there's anything that he's probably going to want to correct, it's the sacks he took. Mm-hmm. Took 42 last year, fourth most in the NFL. That's too many.
Way too many.
And it wasn't all on the offensive line. So I don't know if I would necessarily call it a bounce-back season. Mm-hmm. I think what a lot of fans would be happy with is a breakout season
right.
from Tyrod Taylor, where you know he takes a noticeable step up from what has usually been 20 touchdowns, five or six picks
right.
kind of a stat line.
Right.
If he can get up to 30
and 10
and take 8 or 10,
right.
I think a lot of Bills fans would take that in a second. And, you know, maybe he can get up to 3,400, 3,500 yards passing
right.
instead of hovering more around 30 or 3,000, 3,200. So if he can make a spike there, you know, I think you're now bordering on a breakout season. You say, okay, you know what? Let's go another year with Tyrod, you know,
right.
and kind of approach it that way. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Back to the phones. And as promised to Mike in Pennsylvania, who's got a pick of his own for who on this roster is going to have a rebound season. Who do you have, Mike?
Well, I don't know if he's going to have a rebound season, but I'm going to tell you the one guy on that list that you guys just named, to me, that affects two other guys on that list is Darius. Darius in the middle of that defense. I expect Sammy to have a good year, but Darius will then affect Jerry Hughes, which would then affect Ronald Darby. So, I mean, if I'm looking for a guy to make an impact, a bounce-back season per se, it's got to be fix the defense and let's start with Darius. And before I go, I wanted to say hi to Thurman. I got the pleasure of watching a game in Thurman's box. Jeff Toole starting. Great game, great family.
That was a Chiefs game.
Yeah.
That was a Chiefs game, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Thurman went from, it was the Chiefs game, you know, from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows, right out of half, right out the gate. But, I mean, nevertheless, it was a fun time. I got to meet his family. And I'm still waiting for him to come down to see them at Andre's charity golf tournament, which I was just at this weekend. But, you guys have a good 4th of July. And my pick on that defensive side of the ball is Darius. That's who I expect. And we got to fix that defense.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mike. We appreciate it. Wow. First a compliment and then – hey, where are you? Why weren't you at Andre's?
Yeah, I know.
First a compliment and then a dig. All in one call. That was pretty impressive. Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good. Yeah, you threw me off.
I
know exactly who that guy is. Yeah, yeah, sorry, Mike. Yeah, I have things happen, man. Son played travel baseball. And,
yeah, there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, so, yeah, Andre knows. Yeah, I texted him and told him I wouldn't be there. But the usual cast of characters were there. You know, Darryl was there, John Randall, all those guys. So
talk to me about Darius, though, because, you know, this is a great. It's still a very good front four. I know Mario is no longer part of the equation, and after his last year here, I don't think people are too upset about that. And now you have Shaq Lawson in that role, you know, at left end. You got Jerry at right, and you still have Kyle and
yep.
Darius in the middle. He thinks Darius is the linchpin, and everything flows from there. Do you agree, or do you think it's kind of a all for one, one for all, four man, go get him kind of group?
I think it's all for one, one for all,
yeah.
four-man kind of group, go get it. I think
they're all pretty talented.
They are pretty talented. I mean, we know what Darius can do.
Yeah.
We know.
He can wreck a game if he really wants to.
By himself, just completely by himself, in the interior part of your defense. So I expect him to really – I think, you know, with running Rex's defense the last couple of years, it just wasn't his fit. It just wasn't his fit for this football team. But I think now that you have a coach now who's only thing that he's talking about – is character and discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two things when every time I talk to Coach McDermott about, those are the two things that he mentioned all the time. And so I think when you have that and you put that mindset into Darius, I think he's going to have a great year. I don't question anything that, you know, that he's done in the past, but I think if you look at a guy as talented that he is and put him in a position to make plays, to disrupt an offense, this guy's he's the guy. He's the he can be like Warren Sapp. He can be like John Randall.
In an upfield scheme like this.
In an upfield scheme, he can be like this. And I think he will be this year.
And here's the interesting thing just about Darius real quick is we asked him, you know, how much are you looking forward to this year and what about the scheme and all this? Do you want to know what he was most happy with? That Kyle was back. Because you want to know what happens out there? Kyle calls the shots.
Right.
He basically reads the front and tells Darius what he's doing.
Right.
And that's why Marcel loves him so much. Because the guy is like right there. He's his right hand man. He's like he's kind of like how Daryl was for Bruce.
Right.
You know?
And how
this is Ken, what we're doing on this play. Right. And how, now go get some meat.
And how Ken Hall was for Reuben Brown when he got here. Exactly. That's exactly how it is. So yeah, I mean, hey, having Kyle back and going back to a scheme that those two guys really created havoc with, it's good to hear. It's good to see. You know, Marcel really talking about, you know, hey, it's great to have Kyle back. That's motivation right there in itself.
Exactly. Well, listen, we caught up with former Bills running back Fred Jackson a little while back, and he kind of caught us up on what he's been up to. Obviously, people have probably seen the news. He's still holding out hope that he gets another crack in the NFL somewhere. Maybe if somebody goes down with an injury or something in training camp, he'll get an opportunity. But we caught up with him here on the John Murphy Show recently, and we wanted to kind of re-air some of his comments because he really kind of brought to light where his head is at with respect to his football career, which, oh, by the way, includes a game coming up on July 15th in the new Spring League. So here's Fred Jackson.
It's one of those things that, you know, I feel like I can still contribute on the field, and I think this is just a way to show that. This is going to be an opportunity to go out and, you know, show some teams that, you know, I'm 36, but I can still move around on the field pretty well. And if they need me, they can bring me in, and I'll be able to give them my talents and help them win some games.
Fred, sorry about that. Donald Tootie J here.
Mm-hmm. Tootie J.
You have you been training this entire time, or have you taken time off and now you're getting back into training? How's it been going?
I've been doing some things on and off here the entire time. You know, but I've kind of picked up last couple of months, you know, just trying to get ready for, you know, if something happened this off season. But it's one of those things that I haven't really taken any time off. I was trying to play last year, so I was staying in it then. So it hasn't been hard for me to make that transition into picking it up full time now.
The Spring League Showcase is not just one game, right, Fred? It's like a six-day event out in Northern California. Tell us, what did you sign up for here? What is this all about?
It is. It's a six-day event where we go out there and we go through basically a five-day training camp like we would if we were on any NFL team. And then at the end of it, we have a game. So I think it's just going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of guys out there trying to, you know, do exactly what I'm doing, you know, showcasing that they can compete and play at a high level. So it's going to be, you know, great energy. A lot of guys, you know, laying it out on the line, and it's going to be a lot of fun to compete with those guys.
Are you going to be the oldest guy on the roster out there, Frank?
I'm sure I will be. You know, that's not uncommon. You know, I've been the oldest guy on you know, rosters for about 4 years now, so I don't expect that to change.
Now, there are a lot of other guys that have played in the league that have some names that are playing in this game with you. Have you had a chance to speak to any of them?
Not yet, but that's something I think as the time gets closer, you know, I'll reach out to some of those guys like Booby. You know, we all know Booby Dixon. He'll be somebody that I'll reach out to and just ask him, you know, how he's going to approach it and what he's looking forward to doing and things like that. So it'll be a lot of fun to get out there and compete on the field with Booby again. You know, he was a lot of fun to, you know, play with when he was in Buffalo and I was as well. So it'd be fun to get back out there with him.
Yeah, Booby Dixon actually did the Spring League, right, in West Virginia, this thing they did back in, what, March and April, I want to say. He was there, right?
I believe so. You know, so it'd be good to pick his brain and see what to expect.
What do you expect? First, did I read that Donnie Henderson, one of the coaches out there at this?
Yep, Donnie is one of the coaches. You know, I talked to him the other day. He said it's going to be a great experience and something that I'll enjoy.
And who else do you know that's going to be on this in the Spring League Showcase week?
Right now, as far as I know, it's going to be Donnie is somebody that I know. Booby and Greg Hardy is supposed to be out there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I know he's trying to do whatever he can to get back in the league too. So it'd be interesting to see how it goes down out there.
Now, I mean, do you have any expectations or goals that you're trying to set for yourself?
It's the number one thing for me is just to go out and, you know, enjoy it. You know, have fun doing it. Anytime you get to lace up the cleats and go out and be on the football field, I think you got to take advantage of that and have fun doing it. So that's the number one thing. And, you know, number two is just show teams that I can still play. You know, be able to make some plays when I'm out there. And if there's any, you know, NFL execs that are out at the camp and at the game watching, put on a show for him so, you know, I can, put some of that he's too old to play to rest. So that's the number one thing or number two thing that I'm going to try and do.
I guess there were scouts and a lot of NFL people around the Spring League in West Virginia, and I read that they're going to make, you know, video available. So any teams that might be interested in who's playing out there in the showcase next month will be able to get their hands on video and see for themselves if they can't get out there, huh, Fred?
Yep, and I think that's what they're trying to do for all the guys that want to play at that next level. So they're doing a tremendous job with it, and, you know, it's one of the reasons I signed up to do it. I've been saying that I want to get back in, and this is just another opportunity to showcase myself.
Do you have to go in, like, a week early, 2 weeks early? How are you going about that? When do you guys have to report?
Get the itinerary tomorrow. You know, I'll find out. I think we'll probably be there, if I'm guessing, we'll be there 1-2 days early just to kind of get the feel of what's going to happen. And then, you know, take it from there. You know, it's one of those things, you know, after being in the league for 10 years and going to training camps, nothing's going to surprise me. So
yeah.
I'll be ready to go.
Are the practices padded practices with contact, Fred, or do they take it easy on you a little bit?
No, I would assume that we're going to have some kind of padded practices just so, guys could get into that mindset of going out there and competing in the game. So, but we'll see. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, I'm flying kind of by the seat of my pants right now. I don't know exactly what to expect, but, I'll be ready for whatever we have to do.
Fred, how hard is it for you, a guy who played so long in the NFL and played at a pretty high level, done a lot of things for this organization out in Buffalo, for you to now go and play in a game like this and not even say to yourself, man, I'm above this, you know, and think like that?
Yeah, and that's just it. You know, I come from a background, you know, where I've had to, you know, work hard to get to wherever I was anyway. So for me, it's just about putting in the work. And I think, you know, this is just another part of, you know, that story is doing whatever you have to show that you can compete at that level. And, it's nothing new to me. So for me, you know, I'm just enjoying it. You know, if nothing comes from it, nothing comes from it. You know, it's an opportunity, like I said, to lace up my cleats and put on some shoulder pads and go knock some heads for a few hours. And, if that's what it is, then that's what it is. And, you know, you move on from that.
How hard, Fred, have you been trying over a couple of years now, or at least a little bit more than a year, to get back into the NFL? How close did you get with teams?
Oh, well, I mean, it's been a combination of a few things. You know, I actually got a phone call from Rex, would have been last year, going into training camp, telling me to be ready. He was bringing me in, and it just kind of fell through. So, you know, I was supposed to be back in Buffalo last year. That didn't happen. Then I was talking to, you know, Oakland, San Diego, you know, a bunch of different teams here and there. And, you know, nothing just ever happened or came from it. So it's been one of those things where, you know, I've been in the mindset that, you know, something's going to happen and just stay ready in case it does. And when it didn't, you know, it just didn't happen. So I got 10 years in, which was 10 years longer than I was supposed to play in the league. So
yeah.
I always kind of just fell on that. And I mean, a 10-year career is great for anybody, and they'll let you know that if they had an opportunity to play in the NFL.
When I think back, I wonder if the call from Rex, the call from the Bills, was when they eventually settled on Reggie Bush last summer, right, in August? Was that about when they called you?
Yep, that was exactly what happened. You know, it was he called me and said that he wanted me to come in and, you know, and compete for the backup running back job. And then there was other decisions that were made to go with Reggie, you know, and that's just how that played out. And, for me, it just was one of those things where I just tried to move on to the next opportunity.
How sweet would that have been to get back here last year, even as disappointing as last year was for the team?
Oh, man, it's would have been the icing on the cake for me in my career is to have a chance to finish out, you know, playing in Buffalo, you know, in front of the Bills fans again. And, if that was the case, we wouldn't be where we are today. You know, I just want to get one more year in, and then to have that opportunity to play last year would have done it for me, and I would have laid it all out on the line, and like I said, it would have just been icing on the cake.
Fred, I want to now kind of shift things to one of your friends. He's been doing a lot of bike riding lately. He almost got hit by a bus out in, like, Scotland somewhere. then he took another bike ride with, like, 500 people. But Marshawn Lynch, and coming back, I'm sure you've had a chance to talk to him. How's he liking being in Oakland Raider?
Oh, man, he's loving every minute of it. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, if it wasn't Oakland, it wasn't going to happen. And, you know, with them moving to Vegas, he said he wanted to get back to Oakland and play for them and, you know, give the kids of Oakland somebody that they can look up to one more time. And, you know, I think he is the perfect person for that. You know, he represents Oakland, you know, to the fullest. He has it tatted on his chest. And, you know, he eats, sleeps, dreams, and drinks Oakland. So, you know, he's loving every minute that he has out there. And I think he couldn't ask for a better story, you know, to write for himself.
How's he feeling physically now going through an OTA? I think I read that he wasn't doing much in OTAs, but I did see a good run out of him. So how's he feeling physically?
No, I mean, like he can go out there and do everything he did before. So he's feeling great. You know, like you said, he doesn't do a lot during OTAs, and he hadn't been doing a lot during OTAs in the latter part of his career. So nothing's changed, but he'll be ready to go once, you know, that ball is snapped in the regular season. He'll be out there ready to compete with anybody.
Right. You see how Oakland, obviously his hometown, embraces Marshawn, and how the folks in Seattle did, and you were here for Marshawn's tenure in Buffalo. Do you think folks in Buffalo, fans in Buffalo, just did not get Marshawn Lynch, especially the young, just out of college version of Marshawn Lynch?
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's everywhere. You know, in defense of, you know, Buffalo, you know, he might not have represented, you know, himself to the best of his abilities when he was there. So, but, you know, I think anybody that knew Marshawn and had any kind of relationship with him, you know, when he was here in Buffalo, loved him. You know, he was a guy that the exact same guy that he is was in Seattle and that he is in Oakland. You know, nothing's changed. You know, he's still that same man that, you know, cares deeply for anybody that's close to him and puts it all out there on the line for him. So, that's why people love him and what he does and what he's about. You know, he's showing that by going back to Oakland and coming out of retirement to go compete for, you know, the young generation of Oakland fans. So, you know, he's a great guy, and, you know, I think anybody that knows him personally, you know, will vouch for that.
Marshawn is, what, 31?
31. Yeah,
31 years old. You think he can carry the load out there, Fred?
Without a doubt. You know, there's no question in my mind, and, you know, I'm excited to see what he does this year just because, you know, he's hungry again. You know, he wants to be the guy that helps Oakland get over the top and the guy that, you know, they can lean on and hand the ball, you know, 20, 25 times a game. And, you know, along with that passing attack that him and or Derek Carr and those guys have out there, I think they're going to be pretty formidable.
We're on the line with Fred Jackson, former Bills running back, 9 seasons here, 10 years in the National Football League, getting ready to play in the Spring League Showcase game next month in Napa, California. Marshawn is 31, as Donald just said. You are 36, Fred. What makes you think you can do what most people can't, play football well at age 36, play running back well at age 36?
You know, it's one of those things when you look at the touches that I have compared to, you know Marshawn. Marshawn probably has – you know, I don't know, twice as many carries and, you know, twice as much workload as I had my entire career. So there's still some tread on these tires, you know, and if I didn't feel that was the case, you know, I wouldn't be out here trying to do that. You know, when I went to Seattle, I didn't get a lot of workload. You know, they had a young back in Thomas Rawls that was, you know, playing out of his mind. So I didn't get a heavy workload when I was there. And, you know, I still feel like I can contribute to this game. And the best way for me to do that is, or the best way for me to show that is to get out here in this game and show so.
Do you feel like there's something that you need to prove? Is that why you're trying so hard to get back into football?
You know, I don't think there's anything that I need to prove. I just, you know, love to play. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, I've loved playing this game. And I think every play that I had on the field, I showed that, you know. And I feel like one more year would be, you know, great for me. And, you know, I think that's all I need is the one year to get out here and, you know, move around and compete at that level one more time. And then, you know, I'll be able to ride off into the sunset and be happy with, you know, what I've accomplished in the league.
Well, as you know, people here root for you. I mean, you feel it, I'm sure. You get back to town, you're here for Kelly's tournament and the Buffalo News event. You have the steakhouse, the interest in Sears Steakhouse downtown, right? So it's not as if you've cut ties with Buffalo. You're around here quite a bit, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, Buffalo is home, you know, and that's always going to be the case. You know, I'm going to be back in Buffalo as much as possible. You know, Buffalo has meant a tremendous amount to me. And the fan base out there, I couldn't ask for, you know, a better fan base to call home and be proud to have played for. You know, those guys always show me love. And, for me, it's returning that favor. Anytime that I see anybody in public and wants to come take a picture, you know, I'm happy to do so because of what of all the things that they've done for me.
Well, you got the whole area rooting for you, Fred. I hope this goes well in a couple of weeks, and we'll check back in with you. Hopefully, maybe you get signed with somebody else before training camp. That'd be great, right? That's the goal.
That is the goal, and you know, I hope it happens. So we'll see what goes on in the next few weeks. And I appreciate you guys having me on. It's always great to talk to you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you,
Fred Jackson, Bills running back, getting set to play in the Spring League Showcase. It's 3 weeks away. July 10th through the 15th, the game, it winds up with a regulation NFL game, NFL rules game, but it's a six-day event for professional football talent, former collegiate and NFL players, joint practices, instruction from professional-level coaches like Donnie Henderson.
So that's Fred Jackson, who appeared on the John Murphy Show here earlier this month and, you know, had some good things to say. He's got that game coming up, the Spring League game at Napa Memorial Arena. Or stadium out in California coming up on July 15th. It's going to be interesting to see just what he can do. Age 36, that's tough.
That is
I mean,
tough.
At least
but it's Fred.
In terms of convincing, well, it is Fred. And in terms of convincing NFL scouts, right. NFL personnel evaluators, you know what? This guy can still help us in a third down role. This guy can still help us as a backup or something to that effect. And as he mentioned, you know, if you look at my carry load over the course of my 10-year career, it's a lot lighter than most guys. Yep. So he still thinks he's got Fred still thinks there's tread on Fred is basically right. the scenario there.
Exactly.
We got to take a break. Thurman and I will be back on the other side as we talk about bounce-back years for certain Bills who may not have lived up to their own expectations in 2016. Who's got a good chance to bounce back in 2017? We've got a couple other things on the table that are Bills-related. We'll get to those also. Here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas here on this Friday edition of the John Murphy Show as we are quickly heading into that July 4th holiday weekend. We hope you're all ready to enjoy it. I know I am. I'm going to get my grill on very soon. I got a problem with red meat. I really do.
You do?
My wife tries to be good about, you know, mixing a lot of chicken and fish in.
Yeah.
You know, the lean protein. I just like red meat a lot. I have a problem.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I you know, everything in moderation. But
right.
If there's a chance to... You know, if I'm in charge of dinner and I got burgers in the freezer, they're coming out.
They're coming.
Or, you know, like a nice cut sirloin or something.
Right,
it's coming out. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. As we are talking about bounce-back years for some certain Bills who maybe fell short of even their own expectations individually last year, and we've got it as our Twitter poll right now. Who's poised to have a rebound season? And the four guys we've got on the list there are Ronald Darby, Marcell Dareus, Jerry Hughes, and Sammy Watkins. If you've got somebody else, that's fine. We'd like to hear from you at 803-0550. And we are going to go back to the phones now.
Wow.
Jamar on a cell has been waiting patiently. Jamar, who do you have for us?
I got Tyrod Taylor for you guys, man. I just think, you know, being familiar with the offensive system. And also just, you know, the coaching, better coaching, a couple more years in the league, being more comfortable. Sammy coming back, of course, and You mentioned earlier the two games you've seen him throwing down the middle.
Yep.
I thought I've seen three games where he was, you know, really touching the middle up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
To say something to Thurman, man, thanks for the memories. We still talking about y'all, man. We still.
That's because he's still here. He's not going away. Look at him. He's sitting right next to me on a radio show here.
Well, I'm 34 years old, and, you know, I grew up in that time, and, you know, I was a kid, of course, but, you know, the family, and, you know, you knew who everybody was. You knew what it was, and, you know, I still haven't seen a running back run sideways through the hole. So, yeah, we talk about you, man. We love it, man. We love the memories. We appreciate everything, man.
I appreciate it.
To this day.
All right, thanks for the call. Jamar, we appreciate that. And
yeah, I'm kind of ready to move on, too.
You were good at getting skinny, though, I'll say that.
Right.
You were good at getting skinny.
Yeah, we talked to, you know, Jim and myself and Tasker and Bruce and pretty much the guys that live around here. You know, we were like, you know, hey, we meet all these people, and we're like, hey, we're tired of talking about us also. Oh, the glory days.
No wonder you guys root for the current team so much.
We want these guys to win so bad, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, whatever, it's been 17 years or what have you, but, you know, I understand, you know, the things that we did back in the day. But, you know what, hey, look.
This team could make the playoffs and make a nice run, and I still don't think the conversation about you guys will ever change because it was just – it was too special a time, and I think everybody recognizes it, readily recognizes it. I mean, those are the 4 years that I was in college when those games were, you know, when you guys made the four straight runs. And I was a downstate native. I was not really well-versed in what you guys were putting together up here. But let me tell you, some of my college roommates made me wholly familiar with what was going on.
Right.
And I'm just like, holy cow, this is like a big deal up here. This is like, this is everything.
Yeah.
And I think it was everything for a lot of people, and because it stretched for such a long period of time. I mean, you can go all the way back to 88, you know, and you don't lose that game in Cleveland. I mean, we might be talking about 6 years in a row, you know, that you're in the AFC Championship game.
Right.
That's a lot of time to make an impact. So you're going to – I'm sorry. You're going to have to live with it. You guys created your own problem.
It's all fine and dandy. We enjoyed, but you know what? Like I said, you know, we want these guys to win so badly. I mean, just think about a guy like Kyle Williams, been here.
Eric
Wood. Great as a player that Kyle is, never been to the playoffs.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that's, to me,
it's
that's
criminal
just,
almost,
it
right?
It is almost criminal. And he's such a great guy and such a talented football player. And I can't believe he's a scratch golfer.
Yeah.
That's another subject.
That might be more impressive.
Right, exactly. So, but you know what? For me, you know, I want the Bills to win. I want the Sabres to win.
Mm-hmm.
I even cheer for the Bisons. I mean, I'm just caught up in everything Buffalo, and so I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, I keep telling people the greatest party in Buffalo will be when they win the Super Bowl.
People won't work for a month.
But obviously, I take it a step further because I'm so into this. The Bills and the Sabres win Super Bowl and Stanley Cup same year. Absolutely bonkers around.
Half the people here would just die because they could think I can die now.
Now I can go to Florida.
I can die happy. I could die happy. And people wouldn't work for a month.
Right.
The city would shut down. Nothing would get done. Trash would be piling up outside people's houses. It'd be bad. Jamar mentioned Tyrod. You know, we had another caller mention Tyrod, too. And, you know, I just kind of see Tyrod, if he's going to – I don't think he's going to rebound as much as he's going to break out if he really puts something together here in 2017. He mentioned Sammy coming back certainly helps him. I don't debate that for a second. And he thinks he made an interesting point, though, Jamar did, thinking his familiarity having run this offense before, he thinks, is also going to do wonders for him. I will say this. I asked Tyrod, how beneficial has it been having T.J. Yates in the room with you with respect to this offense? Because T.J. ran it with Kubiak and Dennison in Houston for 3 years.
Yes.
This is a guy that's repped these plays for like 3 years, knows all the nuances, and now you've got that guy sitting at your elbow in the quarterback room, you know, kind of dicing stuff up or has an answer at the ready if you've got an extra question because, you know, you're still trying to refresh your memory. It's been 3 years since you've been in that offense.
Right.
You're going to have to kind of get some of that memory back, and he's there to help you. I just got to think having those answers, just an extra resource, has got to be great.
It has to be great for him. But, you know, I think when you're a quarterback and, like you say, you've been in this offense before and now you're learning terminology all over again. You have T.J. Yates, but you got to think about the other 10 players, too, that have not been in this offense. There's different terminology for them. There's different kind of route running for the wide receivers, the tight end, blocking scheme. So, I mean, yes, it starts with Tyrod, but you got to look at the entire offense. I mean, this is – I mean, how many times have these guys been in a different offense for the last, I don't know how many years?
It's a lot.
It's a lot. And so I think now, you know, you might have – from what I hear – you have some great teachers, some great coaches.
Yeah.
This is probably the most ready an offense or coaches on both sides
I've seen in a long time. Maybe since some of your staffs, you know, later in your career. Wade Phillips' staff is the next closest thing. In terms of experience across the board.
Yeah, and I think that's a major factor in which Coach McDermott really picked these guys. Like, okay, I need this type of guy. With this experience, what has he done? And I think that if you look at this coaching staff, from top to bottom, it's really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good on both sides of the football.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, as we're looking at some players that are poised for, well, in Tyrod's case, it would be a breakout season, but for some other guys, a rebound season. And Sammy Watkins is running away with our Twitter poll right now. He had 60% of the vote a couple of minutes ago. And I think that's almost more – because fans want that.
They want that.
Than anything else.
They want that to happen.
They know if that happens, this team is probably, if he's playing his ball and LaShawn's playing his ball and Tyrod is holding down the fort and not making silly mistakes, which he usually doesn't, you're probably scoring more than 24 points a game.
Cool.
So if this offense is doing right by Coach McDermott's scheme, the way he's got it drawn up, 24 points, you know, 26 points, 28 points, that's going to win you more games than it's going to lose in the NFL.
And you talk about, you know, the offensive side of the ball. I look at, like, the defensive side of the ball. I mean, that's kind of what I was taught a little bit, you know, to watch the defense. Preston Brown, Reggie Ragland. There's two players right there that Preston Brown needs to have a bounce back year, too.
Yeah, I would put him in that category.
I would put him in that category.
I think he was a little, I don't want to say lost. He's a smart player.
Very smart.
But there were so many checks in that scheme that, and here's the thing, that should have rang bells, shouldn't it? I mean, when you got a guy who's as cerebral a player as Preston Brown is, and he's getting crossed up with all the checks, that's the time to say, hey, guy, whoa. We got to shuck this thing down to the cob here and make this simpler
for everybody,
especially the guy that's calling the plays. In the huddle. And it never happened, obviously, but I talked to Preston in the spring, you know, when these guys were here practicing, and he said it's a much more stripped-down system.
Mm-hmm.
The calls are easy. The checks are easy. And it's not like this defense isn't going to have – the answers when there's a shift, you know, by the offense or some kind of overload situation that you weren't anticipating based on the personnel grouping.
Right.
He says there are the checks that you need to get our defense in the right play or the best possible play every time. He said there's just not these extra bells and whistles that Rex always liked to dress the defense up with. He was convinced that I'm going to outsmart you guys. The problem was he outsmarted some of his own players in the process. And then the execution suffered. And that's, you know, that's not a knock on Rex. It was just a little misguided, I think. I think he just took it too far.
Too far, right.
And trying to have all the answers himself instead of just letting his players play.
Yeah. I mean, you have to let your players just play. They have to be out there on the football field comfortable, feeling good about whatever the coaches call. Whether you're on offense, defense, or special team, you have to feel comfortable in the position where if you watch Carolina's defense and the offense does something, whatever, I mean, Thomas Davis, Luke Kuechly, they're both guys are just, they're pointing to, Thomas has his side and Luke has his side. They're pointing over here, yelling things and yelling things back and forth, and it's settled right there. That's what you have to got. You don't, man, when you got guys running all over the place and doing this right here, That's a bad sign, and we saw that all too much. Really,
or
over the past 2 years.
Or you're short a man, or you've got an extra guy.
Yeah, it's just
12 and
good.
10 are not good numbers on defense.
You know, let me say something about this, like this poll that we're doing right with all these guys. How about it just be the team?
That would be nice. How about it just be the rebound season for the team? Yeah. I'm all for it.
Just
go right across the board.
Just go right across the board.
Exactly. Yep. So
803-0550, 1-888-550, 2550 to get on board with Thurman and I as we are here on the John Murphy Show, Friday edition, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Back for another segment to close out the second hour of the show. From One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Thurman Thomas with you here on a Friday edition of the John Murphy Show. And what we're going to do here real quick before the top of the hour is kind of put together a little Fan Friday segment. Fan Friday is something that I do on BuffaloBills.com every Friday for my followers on Twitter and those who email me at AskChris@Bills.NFL.net. They send me Bills questions and we try to answer a handful of them. Thurman and I are going to do that right now with some that came in on the Twitter feed. So first one comes from Mikey, and he asks me, do you know if the Bills are bringing in linebacker Zach Orr for a visit? Do you think he would be a fit for our defense? Now, here's the thing. Orr's got a neck condition, and I think while there are reportedly 15 teams interested, I think they're only interested in kicking the tires and seeing how healthy he is with their own medical staff. There's a very good chance that more than half of them fail him, and he can't resume his career. I think he's hoping he can find one team that likes him enough, A, or B, is desperate enough to pass him and then sign him to a contract. That team could be a team like the Jets, who he's supposed to visit with later today and through the weekend. The Lions are the other team that visited. There are supposedly 15 teams interested in him. I don't know that the Bills are one of them. With the injury history they've had to deal with the last few years, Aaron Williams with his neck, then you look at Sammy Watkins issues, Reggie Ragland. I can't see the Bills taking on another injury risk at this point in time. Second one will go to you, Thurman. This is from Jordan Lewis. He says, if Tyrod struggles early, will Nathan Peterman step in and be given a chance in year one?
Nope.
I don't even know if he's going to be the backup. I think he could compete for it.
Right.
But I think T.J. Yates is kind of that security blanket they'd like to have
I think he is on the
roster.
Yes, he is.
Next one from Ricardo Vela. Is there any chance the Bills can play a regular season game in Mexico? Now, this is undoubtedly one of the Mexico Bills backers down there south of the border. I met one of those fans when I was on vacation in Mexico. He saw me at a resort, and he stopped me. He says, are you Chris Brown? Because I had a Bills shirt on. And I said, yeah. So he's taking a picture with me. He's all excited. But there is a contingent of Bills fans down there that would turn out for a game like that. The thing is, I think what the NFL strives for with games internationally is for a team that has a dedicated Hispanic fan base. And that is why you saw the Oakland Raiders down there with the Houston Texans.
Yep.
Because the Hispanic fan base in Oakland for the Raiders is like unprecedented.
Yeah.
And it carries south of the border.
Yes, it does.
Dallas is another team. Right, Dallas is another team. Arizona. It's usually one of those border teams down there in the southwest part of the country that handles that. So I don't think Mexico City is likely to get the Bills anytime soon. I would say the Bills are more likely to play in Europe, in England, where there is a dedicated Bills backers group there as well, more than Mexico City. Next one for you, Therm. Are the Bills looking to add any additional veteran free agents? Revis, Barnage, Bolden. It'd be interesting to put Revis at safety like Graham. I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Barnage, I would say, is the only remote possibility, and the money's got to be right.
Yeah.
And he's still looking for starter money. I don't know where he's getting that unless somebody goes down with a major injury.
Yeah, I think they're pretty much set with their roster right now as far as going into training camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, only way he can come into the play is if Charles Clay go down or something like that, but I don't see that happening.
Yeah. So that is our little bit of Fan Friday. If we have a time at the top of the next hour, we'll do it also. Just trying to get some answers out there for Bills fans. We got a couple of calls on hold. Jordan in Sacramento, Pat on a cell. Hang on. We will get to you after the break as we're talking about bounce-back seasons for some individual players on the Bills roster. Who do you think is poised to have one? We want to hear from you at 803-0550. It's the Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas here along with Chris Brown on a Friday edition of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports up State.
Your sports update from One Bills Drive starts with the Buffalo Sabres, who greatly improved their blue line a day before free agency. GM Jason Botterill swinging a trade with the Minnesota Wild, acquiring defenseman Marco Scandella and forward Jason Pominville in exchange for Tyler Ennis and Marcus Foligno. Scandella could wind up being part of a top pairing for the Sabres on the blue line with Rasmus Ruotsalainen. For Pominville, it's his second stint with Buffalo, where he began his NHL career and played 9 seasons. NHL free agency opens on Saturday at noon. NHL clubs had this week to meet with prospective free agents, but actual signings cannot take place until tomorrow. Among the hottest commodities on the market are Washington defenseman Kevin Shattenkirk, Montreal winger Alexander Radulov, and Minnesota center Martin Hanzel. The free agent tour of linebacker Zach Orr continues. The 25-year-old is trying to make a comeback after abruptly retiring due to a neck condition. He's wrapping up a visit today with the Lions and then will reportedly meet with the Jets over the weekend. That according to ESPN.com. Orr reportedly has up to 15 NFL teams interested in doing their due diligence on him and that neck condition. NBA free agency gets going 12 hours earlier than NHL free agency. It starts at midnight tonight. The latest development comes out of Phoenix, where the Suns will reportedly be courting the services of pending Clippers free agent forward Blake Griffin and Hawks forward Paul Millsap. Griffin will reportedly meet with the Suns on Saturday, with Millsap to follow on Sunday. And the Bisons have a 7:05 first pitch tonight against Syracuse. That is your sports update as we enter the final hour of the program here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. And we want to get back to the phones as we're talking about bounce-back seasons for individual players on the Bills roster. I think there were a host of players who were not happy with the seasons they had individually, let alone by the team. And we've been kind of bouncing a few around. Sammy Watkins, due to missing half the season injury. We had Marcel Darius on that list, who I think by his own account underachieved. Ronald Darby was still hot now that he finished last season with 0 interceptions. And Jerry Hughes, whose production fell off after the team went to a 3-4 the past 2 seasons. So as promised, we lead off with Jordan in Sacramento. Jordan, who do you have for us for a bounce back year?
Hey, how you guys doing? I got one that maybe not a lot of people are thinking about, in Jordan Mills.
Okay.
I know that he struggled mightily last year, and this offseason, Coach McDermott was quoted saying he's had one heck of an offseason. And, I mean, I know that coaches will say that from time to time, but I know he's going to be vital to this offense. You know, the offensive line was one of our strongest parts of our team.
Right.
You know, we were able to run the ball. But if we want to have the success, we want Tyrod and Sammy and all these other guys to take a step forward, it's going to start on the offensive line, and we can't be, you know, having Jordan Mills giving up, you know, sacks and pressures and things like that if we want this team to succeed. So it sounds like since they drafted Deion Dawkins, maybe that's kind of pushed him a little bit.
Yeah.
Kind of got him to, you know, work a little harder, and he's, you know, he's getting the attention of the new coaching staff. So I'm really looking forward to him, you know, solidifying our pretty good line as it is, and, you know, having a bounce back season this year.
All right, Jordan, good call, and thanks for it. That's going to be one of the more intriguing competitions at training camp, that right tackle spot, because I think the full anticipation is Cordy Glenn, off his ankle rehab, will be ready to go at training camp, and they'll just plug him right back in at left tackle, where Dawkins had spent all of the spring, and flip him over to the right side to compete directly with Jordan Mills. I mean, that is going to be one of the more heated training camp battles.
Yeah, and just to go back to what I said earlier with these coaches, it's going to be battles everywhere.
Yeah.
Absolutely everywhere. So, I mean, you guys got your work cut out for them, trying to watch defense, offense, and all these other type of guys. But it's going to be a battle wherever you look at.
And I agree with the caller. Jordan said, you know, maybe because Dawkins is here, Mills has upped his game. You want to talk about incentive. The kid was a second-round pick, and they traded up for him. He's going to come in here and get a decent look from this staff that invested in him.
Yes.
And if he is a hair, an eyelash better than Jordan Mills, Jordan Mills is going to be the backup. So there's no slacking off any day, any play, in any of the practice sessions at training camp for Jordan Mills. He came back. He signed a relatively modest free agent contract. And it is a good thing, I believe, that all 5 linemen from last year are back in the starting lineup, at least as camp opens here. But if they like what they see out of Dawkins once the pads go on, it could be over quick for Jordan Mills. So he better hope he's improved his game to hold on to that spot. I think it's his spot to lose.
Right.
But this Dawkins kid is pretty well put together. I mean, you look at Deion Dawkins, the eyeball test, you look at his body type and you're like, man, I hope he can move his feet. Then you see him move his feet, you're like, oh, dang. He's a lot more athletic than he looks, you know, right, with the eyeball test. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be a decent player. It's just going to be interesting to see how quickly he can get onto the field. 803-0550, let's take another call. We go to Pat on a cell. Pat, who do you have for a bounce-back year on the Bills roster here in 2017?
I think it's got to be Jerry Hughes.
Okay.
The reason I say that is because he thrived when he was under Schwartz a couple of years ago. That's when they brought him in, and he got what, double digits in sacks?
Yeah, two 10 sack seasons under Pettine and then Schwartz.
Yep. Yeah, so switching back to 4-3 will only benefit him.
Right.
He'll be able to do what he was brought in to do, and that was, you know, get after the quarterback. All right? And with Lawson on the other side, you got a pretty good potent, you know, front four there with Darius and Williams in the middle.
Yeah.
So I think that he's got to be the, you know, he's got to be the guy.
Okay.
Right, and it's going to make, because everybody couldn't figure out the defense last year, as you had said.
Yeah.
And so the guys that suffered on it were the guys in the front line because they had to keep backing up to catch, you know, go after receivers.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be, you know, a better year for them.
All right, Pat, we appreciate the call, and thanks for agreeing with Thurman and I, too, because
that's right.
I think Hughes is the odds on, I think he's the most likely guy to get back to the production that he had previously.
Yeah.
You know, with Sammy, if he's healthy, I think he can unquestionably have a breakout year. But I think that's a big if right now. I mean, we certainly want him back healthy, but guarantee it? I don't know. And Darby, you know, you got to get opportunities on the ball based on where the quarterback's throwing, so you're dependent upon that. And who was our other guy? Our other guy was Darius. You know, Darius could very easily get back to the same production, too, with this scheme. But I think Jerry is going to be foaming at the mouth coming off the edge, right?
Yeah, I've actually talked to Jerry a couple of times. You know,
A couple of Texas guys,
right. We keep up with each other. And, I mean, he's pumped. He's pumped again. He's like, I say, how do you feel about the new scheme? Love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. So, I mean, I think when you talk to all these defensive players and by the time training camp comes along and get these preseason games, I think they're going to have this down pack and they're going to have an outstanding year. There's no reason for this defense, especially that front four, not to have a great year.
Yeah, no question about it.
Yeah.
And you, I mean, between the history of what these guys have done in a 4-3 and the history of McDermott's defense in terms of production and the scheme that he runs, it looks like a match made in heaven for guys like Jerry Hughes, Kyle Williams, all those guys up front.
Even the backups.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But,
I mean,
but chiefly those guys that have produced in a scheme like this before. Okay. At this point in time, we wanted to revisit an interview that we did with Jim Kelly earlier this week here on the John Murphy Show. Jim, now in his 30th year of his youth football camp, which just wrapped up this week, he also shed some light on some other stuff that he's got going on, along with some aspirations for how far he wants to take this youth football camp now that year 30 is in the rearview mirror. Here's Jim Kelly.
You know, a long time ago, I think my dream, my goal was to get 20. And then when I hit 20, that's cool. You know, we'll see how long I can go. And then, of course, when I was diagnosed with cancer, I wasn't sure what was going on. And now here we are in 30, and to be honest with you, I feel pretty good. And now my next goal is 40. So we'll take it, yeah, 1 year at a time.
Yeah.
But 40 is out there a ways. Why not?
Now, we were just talking about a bunch of your friends. We were talking about Dan.
Yep.
Do any of these guys ever say, Jim, like, what's up, man? You done? Are you done? How long you want to do this?
As long as I can. And as long as I have parents and kids that want to come out and enjoy themselves, why not? And as long as the Pegulas, you know, the Buffalo Bills allow me to do it here, I'm going to do it. I mean, the key is being able to have these kids be able to come out on the field that me, Bruce, and Thurman, and even though all these kids never seen us play, but now with the guys, you know, LaShawn and Tyrod and Eric Wood and, you know, all the guys that are playing now, they are in awe of being able to be on the field. And parents get to be close to the field, too, because from the parents I've talked to, a lot of them don't have season tickets. And they don't get an opportunity to come and see, number one, be in the stands for a game, but be right down close to the field. So I love it. I'm like a little kid. Tomorrow I'm going to try to get out with the seniors. Mm-hmm. Today and yesterday I was with the Bantams and juniors playing, you know, the 7-on-7. Tomorrow I'm going to get out with the seniors. My arm feels pretty good, but the legs aren't quite where they used to be. So we'll see what happens.
But it's 7-on-7, right?
Yeah.
In most cases. So
no. But they're allowed to rush the quarterback.
Oh, they are, okay.
Except tomorrow, yeah. I'm going to say, okay, guys, I'll get rid of it quick enough.
Find a red shirt to put on.
You
got
to be able to move left and right a little bit.
No, and that's all I did when I played. Move a little bit left and right.
Right, exactly.
No big runs. But I just want to show some of these young bucks that this old man can still throw the football.
Just throw the red jersey on, then nobody will touch you.
They better not touch me. I'll touch them.
So, you know, you've done this, and this is kind of become a generational thing now that it's gone 30 years, because you were telling us before we went on air, you've got guys that were kids when this camp started in 87 who are bringing their kids now.
And we even have campers from back then are now my coaches that are high school coaches that understand and get what we do here. And to be honest with you guys, you know, yeah, I want the kids to have fun. That's number one. Enjoy themselves and get the passion for the game of football. My biggest thing that I enjoy is the chalk talks.
Yeah.
And we've had Steve Tasker. We've had Mark Kell. So I can go on coaches. This year we have a guy that played at Sweet Home. Now I was one of the chalk talk guys. But for me personally, I try to emphasize what kids got to look forward to. Being in this type of climate, but with social media and everything goes on,
right.
That how these kids got to really watch what they do and watch what they say and how they act. It's all about character now that, you know, one little mistake, it could be, you know, blown all over the internet. Yeah. And more so to the juniors and seniors, I think I try to emphasize that more. And Donald, you know, because you're around the kids now, you're a lot younger than I am, and you've been through that situation even nowadays with my own kids. But have them realize that, you know, now you look across the sports, whether it's in baseball, football, basketball, it's almost a year-round sport for individuals. I mean, there's so many kids, like my nephew, Casey, very, very good quarterback, plays for St. Joe's, but he's also a great lacrosse player. So I'm almost in the part saying, you sure you want to play lacrosse? And the coaches, and they're going to get pulled that way, say, oh, we need you here. So for all the kids out there now, they have to really focus on what they want to do down the road.
Yeah.
What's your goals? What's your dreams?
Now, is that something that you really, I've always, because I was a multi-sport athlete.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I played baseball, I played football, I ran track, I played basketball, and I feel like at a certain age, especially when you're so young, you should still be playing multiple sports.
You shouldn't just
focus on one sport.
I agree. I try to emphasize that too, tell that, you know, when you're young, you can do all those things. But nowadays, I mean, I have a nephew, my brother-in-law's son plays baseball almost all year round. I mean, of course, you can't play it in the wintertime here, but man, it's just all year round. You're traveling to this state. You're going over here. The vacation times, there is none anymore.
Yeah.
The 4th of July, I mean, you got holidays that they're playing tournaments. Like, man, you got to give the parents a break, too. But I agree. I played basketball, football, baseball.
Right.
Baseball till I was 15, and our school didn't have it. And then I golfed. So those things I get. But I think once you start getting close to your junior and senior year, that's when, if you really think you have an opportunity to play major college football or basketball, focus on that one sport, because you got to understand, there's kids in other states.
Oh, yeah.
There's kids in other schools that are focusing on one sport because there's such big competition for that scholarship that parents don't have to come out of back pocket for, that you want your kid to get that scholarship.
803-0550 is the number, but we're talking to Jim about his camp, now 30 years in the books, and that's great.
But we also wanted to bend your ear a little bit about what's kind of gaining more and more traction with respect to the league, and that's the quarterback development problem that seems to become – it's becoming more and more prevalent. It's becoming harder and harder for teams to find their next starting quarterback. And, you know, we had it as our Twitter poll today, number of issues that probably all contribute in some way. Is there one overriding factor that you see as the biggest problem for NFL clubs to develop their next starter?
You know, I do get it to a certain point, spread offense and things like that. But you know what? I see college coaches could care less on where their next job's going to be, meaning the player. They want to win. And if it means playing their style of offense, they're going to do it. Let them worry about, you know, when they leave that facility, when they leave that program, it's up to them to develop once they get to the next level, right, to the pros. Yeah, you want your kids to make it to the big times, but their main focus right now is keeping their job.
Right.
And they're going to do whatever they have to do to make sure they win football games. And I get it. If you want to win football games, fine. But everybody's running that spread offense now, and it does not prepare them for the next level.
So that was my next question for you, because just put yourself in that position. You know, it's the early 80s. You're down there with Coach Snellenberger in Miami. What if he's running an offense where you're getting the plays from the sideline, you're in the gun every play, you're working only one half of the field, mm-hmm, you're not making any progression reads, and you're not taking any snaps under center. Now you come to the NFL, what kind of creek would you be up without a paddle starting your NFL career?
Well, you just got to be good enough to be able to make the adjustment. And bottom line, that's what the way it is. You know, and every kid, I mean, I ask for a raise of hands, how many kids in this room want to, you know, play professional football? And, of course, they all raise their hand. You, as an adult, a parent, got to go and put your son in the best situation that his ultimate dream is to play in the NFL. Give him that chance. But, like me, good example, when I came out of high school, I was recruited to go to the University of Miami to play, you know, the quarterback, the pro-style offense with Lou Saban. I went down there, and they ran the option. And as everybody knows from Buffalo, I am not a running quarterback. And I was going to transfer until Howard Schnellenberger became the coach after my redshirt freshman year, and I was able to prove them that this is the style of offense I came here to run. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, rest is history. I was able to prove to everybody that I can live out that pro-style offense, and look where it ended me. But parents got to really do their homework and send their kids to a program where that style of offense is more prevalent in the NFL. But the NFL is starting to get that way, too. Majority of the times, they're in a shotgun formation. They hardly are ever under the center. The Buffalo Bills are a team like that. They're in gun formation a lot.
Now, do you think the NFL will ever just totally go to that? I feel like you might have some teams that do it, but, you know, the defenses catch up. You can't just fully go to a college style.
So many good athletes.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that you still need that quarterback that it can make most of the reads from the pocket. You want a quarterback to be able to move and on the run and be able to make his first down, like Tyrod. Tyrod does a great job of moving around. But I think you really need a guy that can stay inside the pocket and be able to throw. And if he can make a first down here or there with his legs, great. Right. But don't make it that style of a Russell Wilson when he had his style of offense before, and a couple other guys from the past that can do multiple things. You need a guy that, number one, can stay in the pocket and be able to read a defense.
Now, what are your thoughts about finding some kind of developmental league or establishing some kind of developmental league similar to what maybe NFL Europe was, you know, 8-10 years ago? I mean, you got guys like Kurt Warner, Brad Johnson, Jake Delhomme. I mean, these guys all went to Super Bowls after playing in NFL Europe. I mean, I think there's enough of a track record there to say if you give guys the opportunity to play somewhere else, maybe the experience they're no longer getting in college, they can get in a developmental type league. I mean, the NFL is a league that makes $10 billion a year. Why not invest in your product by putting a developmental league together? What's your thoughts on maybe that helping the cause?
I haven't really thought about that a lot, but it doesn't sound like a bad idea. Yeah, there are guys that, I mean, good example, you have so many guys that get waived by teams and they don't get that opportunity to really show what they can do. I don't think it'll be a bad thing. I think the owner's number one thing is profit.
Yeah.
They want to make money. And I get it. It's a business. It's, you want to have, the city, Buffalo, Philadelphia, wherever the case may be. You want the fans to be able to enjoy themselves. But also, it's a business. So, it'd be cool to see.
I mean, because we had Kelly Holcomb on last hour just because he played in NFL Europe. Mm-hmm. He was on a practice squad in Tampa. He wasn't going to go anywhere. His career was over, and he goes to Europe for a year, puts up some nice numbers. He gets into camp with the Colts. The rest is history. He wasn't a full-time starter, but he got a 12-year career out of that. Yeah. I mean, I just think there's got to be some way to bridge the gap from college to the NFL and – why the NFL wouldn't at least explore. I mean, it's long-range thinking, granted, and they would probably lose money the first two or three years developmental kind of, or maybe 4 years. And I know some of them are still smarting from the losses they took in NFL Europe, but if the end game is to make your product better across the board, you have 30 good quarterbacks in the league instead of 15, the NFL product's better, is it not?
And also coaches. You can groom coaches that are coordinators. You're not sure what you're going to get. And all of a sudden, when they become a head coach, it wasn't quite for them. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's something not only for the players, but you groom the coaches for that head position. Some of the coordinators maybe not quite ready for the big game of NFL.
Yeah.
Give them the opportunity to show what they can do. And then you can narrow it down for the team.
I think you can groom so many different people. You can groom a GM down there as well. You have to go out and find these diamonds in the rough, and next thing you know, that GM is now at the NFL level as an NFL GM. So it will really benefit everyone that the NFL and the owners really just would have to come to grips with making that initial investment.
Maybe you guys know more than me. Have you heard any rumors?
No.
Oh, so you guys are just throwing us up to get this conversation going.
We're spitballing, but they've got this spring league that they're trying to do right now. Fred Jackson's going to go play in this game in July out at Napa Memorial Stadium. They ran like a camp in West Virginia in the spring. Now they're playing this game in July 15th as a showcase. But really, it's not a league. It's a glorified mini camp, just trying to get players in front of NFL scouts and whatnot. I think you've got to do it the right way. I mean, you've got to line it up and have a certain number of teams and put together a season. So guys are playing real games, practicing week after week, and getting the reps that they need in a pro system to develop.
Here's my thing. I feel like you can go to – because guys go to these quarterback gurus in their off seasons. But ultimately, you have to play in game live action.
Live action
to be able to get better at it, and reading the defenses and everything that a quarterback has to do. You have to play in live action. So even in practice, you're not getting hit, so you can stand back there and throw the ball.
It's
you might move
same.
Up. It's just not the same. You have to get live action.
And the more that I start thinking about listening to you guys talking, the more that I think maybe there should be the AFC, NFC. It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be all the teams having one, team.
Yeah,
it could be maybe the AFC East has, two teams. Maybe each division, each conference has X amount, and you get to pick from that group of quarterbacks, wide receivers. You do have a little league. The more I start thinking about it, get the wheels turning, the more I'm starting to think maybe this is right, not only from the player standpoint, but coaching too.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, you have college, but you have guys that, probably could think that they should be an NFL head coach, that maybe they can get that opportunity to show. Maybe they're a great high school football coach, but they want to move it up, but they can't get that job that they need. Who knows? It might be a good platform.
Because you figure you have a 90-man offseason roster. You take 15 guys off of your 90-man roster who are not going to make your 53-man club in September. You take 15 of those guys at specific positions. Maybe a team in the NFC takes 15 of their cuts, and those 30 players get put together on one roster, and then you backfill the rest of that roster with street free agents who are willing to run through a wall and pay and make $10 a game. And you outfit all of those guys. There's your 53-man roster. You play in a town like Birmingham or El Paso. People seat 40,000 for high school games down there. Know. They'll come watch that.
I think it's a good maybe a good idea. We'll see.
You can be our ambassador,
hey,
Jim.
Maybe we can see can where this is going to go in a few years. Hey, remember that interview at my football camp? Yeah, here's where we're at.
Jim,
I like it.
I want to switch topics a little bit and ask you about Chad, how he's doing out there in Denver.
So far, so good. The thing is, and I've just did some interviews prior to, and I said to my biggest focus for him and really told him, I said, don't go there right now thinking you want to compete for that starting job. Go there, number one, to get healthy. Get that knee well. Get the wrist well. Mm-hmm. Slowly go into it. And I think John Elway will give him that opportunity to be able to rehab and get himself back and learn the playbook.
Yeah.
Because not everybody's playbook is, you know, easy. Broncos playbook, there's a lot of verbiage. And when you're a lot of verbiage and you're not used to having that in college, it's tough. Same thing with Paxton Lynch and Simeon.
Yeah.
That was one of the things that they start to think right now. We're starting to really understand the playbook more. But when you're thrown in there and you got so much you have to memorize, it makes it hard. So for Chad, it's just a matter of learn the playbook, get healthy, worry about competing later on down the road.
Right. And the good thing for Chad is those guys don't really have a head start on him per se because, you know, it's a new coordinator coming back in McCoy, and the system has changed from the one they were using a year ago. So everybody's kind of got a clean slate together. So at least, you know, he's got an even playing field from that standpoint. What's been his most popular feedback to you? Like, Uncle Jim, man,
he doesn't have time to get in trouble. No, the key with all those guys, and you know, the good thing about it is it's been a long time since Chad's been in the news about all those things, and that was like 3 years ago. And the thing about it is right now he is so focused on learning the playbook and really wanting to do it, wanting to get it, that I love. I mean, he wants to do it for mom and dad.
Yeah.
And my brother Kevin works his tail off. His wife, a school teacher. He has a little brother named Casey who plays for St. Joe's now. And he wants to do it for his family. And all of his mental preparation is focused on football, and that's where it should be. I have a lot of confidence in him. I just pray it all works out.
We're talking to Jim Kelly here, Hall of Fame quarterback, about a host of topics. We just drifted off on the nephew there a little bit. I still remember him in the pass and kick competitions here in the stadium.
Oh, yeah.
That's how long I've been around. He was just hauling the ball like 50 yards down the field as a 15-year-old. I'm like, okay, I don't think this is going to be much of a competition.
For him coming out of college, everyone talked about his big arm. Once he's fully healthy and he has the playbook, what are some of the things that he's going to have to improve?
Improve, I don't know. I think athletic-wise, he's got it all. He's got to learn the playbook, as we all well know. But the thing about Chad that I love is his work ethic. The kid works his tail off. I mean, that's how he hurt his wrist, doing pull-ups and trying to get stronger and bigger and better. Probably needs to improve on learning how to get down and don't think, you have to run somebody over. You're in the NFL now. Defense is on the other side of the ball. They want to do one thing, knock the heck out of you so you're on the sideline.
Right.
They don't want to physically hurt you to a point where it ruins your career, but they want to hit you so hard that you will spend the rest of the day on the sidelines or in the locker room. But I think he's got everything going for him, and time will only tell.
Jim, we thank you for the time, spending some time with us. JimKellyFootballCamp.com.
Yep. And we 30 years, as we said before, I've been having fun playing flag football this afternoon. Well, I might wait till tomorrow to work out with the seniors to show those young punks that this whole band can still throw the ball.
Yeah, so if you missed out on this year's camp, you know, there's always time to get in early for next year. JimKellyFootballCamp.com is where all the information is. To get the details on Edition 31 in 2018.
And I want to thank the Pagulas for allowing me to have my football camp here, because what a difference it makes when these young kids can go on that football field and play where the guys nowadays and back in the day play. So to Terry and Kim Pagula, thank you all very much. God bless you, man, for allowing us to do it here.
So that was Hall of Fame quarterback Jim Kelly on the program earlier this week. And Thurman and I, as I sit next to another Hall of Famer, we'll continue the show here as we close in on the third and final hour
of the program, The John Murphy Show. We got some NFL news and notes to bounce off of Thurman. We'll have some fun doing that here on the other side. It's The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of The John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas here on The John Murphy Show, Friday edition, heading into the July 4th holiday weekend. We hope everybody has a safe and fun Independence Day coming up on Tuesday. That'll be a lot of fun for everybody. It's when we get the grill on and cook American food, hamburgers, hot dogs, maybe a little Italian sausage.
Sailing hot dogs.
Hey, everybody's got their preferences. But we've been knocking around a lot of stuff. There's some NFL news that I just kind of want to bounce off Thurman and just get his take on. So the first one is, we all know how nuts Tom Brady is
right.
with his diet regimen. He's got his own website. Have you seen that?
No.
It's like TB12 Nutrition or something. I don't know.
Well, he has that He's at over the stadium.
The He's over the top,
yeah.
though. Like,
yeah.
Just with exercise and diet mm-hmm. and everything. So Seattle quarterback Russell Wilson decided he had to take a page out of Tom's book because he felt he was too slow last year. He was playing at about 225, and he felt that was too heavy for him. He's only 5'11".
Right, right.
And he had 16% body fat, which is even high for a quarterback.
Even high. That's gym numbers.
So,
but go
let's
ahead.
Take note of who said that. For those watching at home, I need a witness. So he's now down to 214 pounds and just 10% body fat with his new meal plan. Now, the new meal plan, so you're saying, well, he's trying to lose weight. He's taking less calorie intake. No, he's taking almost twice as much. He was at a 2,700 calorie intake per day. They upped him to 4,800 calories per day to transform how his body processes food. And I've heard this. You want to have more meals to keep the metabolism churning. And I guess for athletes, you can crank it up to 4,800. I don't know if most regular everyday people with 9-to-5 jobs could do this, but he is eating 9 times a day, and he's making sacrifices. But here, I'm going to run through. You tell me if you could live on this, okay? Pre-breakfast, he gets a tablespoon of almond butter and a tablespoon of jam. Oh, boy.
Wow.
Okay? Breakfast, 2 cups of cooked oatmeal, 6 whole eggs, fruit, and chicken breast. Snack in the mid-morning, fruit and 12 almonds. Lunch, 8 ounces of protein with a yam or a cup of rice or a potato and a vegetable. Second lunch, 8 ounces of protein. Again, another sweet potato or a cup of rice, potato, or vegetable. Fruit and 12 almonds, fruit, 12 almonds. Whey protein, dinner, fish, steak, or vegetables or salad. Then he gets another snack at night. More of that almond butter stuff, which if you've ever had, it's awful. It is awful. Oh,
no.
I don't know how you... They shouldn't even call it butter because there's nowhere near butter,
right?
That almond stuff they make eat. So anyway, could you live on something like that even as a player? Like,
no.
You got to make sacrifices and stuff. I know Rusty was strict with you guys.
Yeah,
you know?
Rusty
there was no
strict.
Sign of a dairy product in the cafeteria.
Ew, none of that stuff. And we couldn't have chicken wings and none of that stuff until like Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was, you know, Rusty was ahead of his time with all that stuff right there. But that's over. That's
so no dairy, no breads. Nothing that has yeast or is gluten-bound. The guy hates dairy. No
yes,
dairy, no dairy, no dairy, his trainer says.
He's
so,
married, just had a kid. Yep. I mean, he got to have a separate refrigerator.
Yeah. So here's the best part. He's struggling, okay? There's some days where he's really struggling. And he showed just how much he's struggling on Twitter recently, and for our MSG viewers, they're going to enjoy this, but he put out a tweet which said, oh, the sacrifices, and there's a photo of him looking forlorn and depressed, and above his photo it says, when you want to eat mac and cheese, but you're trying to do right, and he looks completely miserable doing this diet right now. Was that the best part of retirement? You could eat whatever you wanted then?
Pretty much.
I mean, was that number one on the list?
Oh, like, yeah. If you talk to, like, guys that retire that next day or that night, oh, I'm going to get the biggest steak. I'm having mashed potatoes. I'm doing it all. I might have an even, you know, I'm drinking. I'm doing whatever.
Right.
All the stuff that I couldn't do, I'm doing it tonight.
Because I would think what you can eat now and weight training and all of that other stuff, those are the two best things you kick out the door
right
when you're done playing.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
It's amazing to see, though. I mean, with that, Russell Wilson, I don't know. I hope he comes out and plays well.
Well,
because if he doesn't.
He's down to 214, so he's going to look leaner.
Yeah,
they got to catch him, though. Maybe he's
pretty
faster.
Much.
Maybe
pretty
he's
much.
Faster.
He was hurt last year a lot, too.
Yeah, he had that high ankle sprain that he played with. Yeah.
Okay. All right, Russell.
All right, so let's move along. I want to go to this other thing because I found this interesting. Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott mentioned in an interview with Rich Eisen that Tony Romo did an amazing job of helping him out last year. So here's his quote. Tony did an amazing job. I think that's what Tony realized is he couldn't necessarily control whether he was going to play or not, but what he can control is our relationship, Prescott said. And I think Tony did a great job. I commend him. Thank him so much for that. Being another coach for me, helping me out in the middle of a game, at practice, on the field, off the field, giving me advice. And as a guy who went through exactly what I went through, taking over the position from an older veteran and knowing what it's like to be the quarterback of the Cowboys and just helping me out. Now, here's the thing. We hear all the time in this, which might be the biggest cutthroat league out there in professional sports, that this mentoring stuff between quarterbacks doesn't really happen anymore. We know that Brett Favre did not like Aaron Rodgers and didn't help him with anything.
Nothing.
And there are probably a host of other examples.
Right.
I'm not going to pretend to remember or know what the Joe Montana-Steve Young relationship was like. Probably cordial, but cold.
Right.
And you have competitors at the highest level. That kind of camaraderie at a position, you know, as singularly focused as quarterback, do you think it happens more often than not, probably less often than not, or not at all in the league? I mean, here's one example. Where would you say that? Where would you come down on?
I think it happens a lot.
It does.
I think it happens a lot.
Okay.
I definitely think it happens a lot. It's just not talked about a lot.
Okay.
And I think, but you're talking about the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott and Tony Romo. I mean, that's big news for the Dallas Cowboys, right? But I think that goes on in the league a lot more than what people think.
Okay.
I mean, I had a situation. I was kind of the tail end of my career. I helped Antoine Smith
out. Well, I was just going to ask you about Antoine.
Yeah, I helped Antoine Smith
out. First-round pick coming in.
I didn't have a problem with it.
Okay.
I didn't have a problem when, after my senior year, that coach asked me, hey, we would like to play Barry Sanders a little bit more. I say, well, okay, that's fine with me. I don't have a problem with that. But, you know, hey, let me get my carries too.
Yeah.
And so,
Completely freeze me out here, buddy.
Don't completely freeze me out here until I'm gone, right? So, but I think that happens a lot. I think if you go around the NFL to a lot of veteran players who are in this situation that got their job taken away from them because a younger guy stepped in, I think you'll hear that a lot from a lot of the veteran players
that
they helped
them
out. Yeah,
hear.
It is.
I mean, I remember when Troy Vincent was here, and, you know, obviously he was late in his career when he got here.
Yeah.
And he was always big about, you know, paying it forward, you know, passing on the knowledge of the league and doing all that. And, you know, I'm listening to him. And I'm like, well, that's all great.
Yeah.
I said, but that guy's also trying to take your job.
Mm-hmm.
So I always thought that was a difficult balance.
Right.
And for some of the hyper-competitive guys, like Tom Brady, I mean, you're going to have to rip the football out of his hands, step on his throat, and practically choke him to death to take his job away from him. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I think for, like, the upper echelon, super hyper-competitive, over-the-top type of people, that's got to be a hard thing to try to do. I think that's going to be that would be a major struggle for a guy like Tom Brady, who's just so intense and so over-the-top. It's what makes him great,
right?
But I don't know if it makes him a great teammate for another quarterback who's behind him on the depth chart.
Right, yeah.
And Bledsoe was great to him.
He was great to him.
He was great to Tom Brady when he stepped in.
I tell you another example that you think about years ago. Remember when Peyton Manning got hurt and he didn't play and the coach started tanking or whatever, just didn't win? Who was a quarterback then? He had talked about how
– who was that?
God, he had talked about how Peyton Manning was in the meetings – still going over plays and talking to him. I mean, guys do that.
Yeah.
Guys do
that. But here's the thing. You'd expect that from Peyton Manning, a pro's pro.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not convinced Brady would do that. I'm not convinced he would do that.
You don't think
maybe
he's doing it now?
Maybe you'd hope he'd learn his lesson from the way
Bledsoe
handled him.
Yeah.
So you'd like to think he'd return the favor. I'm just not convinced he's made up that way.
Probably not.
We got one more segment here on the John Murphy Show here on a Friday edition. Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas, Chris Brown with you. We'll wrap things up on the other side here on the John Murphy Show. Presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive, Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, along with Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas, wrapping up the John Murphy Show. Heading into the holiday weekend. Thanks for coming in, man. You really kind
of
helped
man.
Us out today. Steve Tasker was supposed to be the guest, but he was a little indisposed today.
It's all right.
Thurm's going to go check on him.
I'm going to go check on him, yep.
Make sure he's good to go. He's sleeping it off, shall we say. not for any carousing.
Right.
This was medical maintenance.
Yes, there you go.
More than anything else.
He's he's older, so he has to get medical
That's
maintenance.
Right. So a reminder, there is no John Murphy Show next week. But the show will be back on the air Monday, July 10th. So just be aware of that. Off for the July 4th week. Back on July 10th. I don't know if Murph is going to be back, but the show will be back. Murph is he's going on a nice long hiatus here, recharging the batteries, shall we say. But it was a good conversation today, Thurm. I think we talked about a lot of fun stuff, including that big Sabres trade right at the top with Tyler Ennis and Marcus Foligno going to Minnesota. In exchange for Jason Pominville and defenseman Marco Scandella. Nice deal for the Sabres today. GM Jason Botterill off to a good start. So we appreciate you having you in.
Thank you.
Have a great holiday weekend.
Same to you.
And so do you, listeners out there in radio and TV land. Ryan Gates is our Entercom board op. George Blass, Jeff Koltanak, helping with production assistance. The executive producer is Jay Harris. I'm Chris Brown for Thurman Thomas. Thanks for joining us. Have a happy Independence Day, everybody. We'll see you soon.